This episode of the Rick Emerson Show is made possible by our good friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
I'd just like to add that the spectrometer readout on the nickel-cadmium alloy mix indicates a good rich strobe and fade, decreasing incidence of wear to the pressure plate. If you could just...
Whoa, little fella, you're not speaking my language.
What my associate is trying to say is that our new brake pads are really cool. You're not even going to believe it. Like, let's say you're driving along the road with your family, and you're driving along, la la la, woo, and then all of a sudden there's a truck tire in the middle of the road, and you hit the brakes. Whoa, that was close. Now let's see what happens when you're driving with the other guy's brake pads. You're driving along, and all of a sudden the kids are yelling from the back seat, "I gotta go to the bathroom, Daddy! Not now, damn it! Truck tire! I can't stop! Help! There's a cliff! And your family's screaming, "Oh my God, we're burning alive! No, I can't feel my legs!" In comes a meat wagon. And the medic gets out and says, "Oh my God." New guy's in the corner puking his guts out. All because you want to save a couple extra pennies. And to me, it doesn't...
Get out.
Nothing. Why, hello. It is 26 minutes after the hour of 1 in this, the month of November in the year of our Lord, 2010. Thank you for coming along and making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, America's new home for quality and fun. Thank you for joining us. It is Tuesday, November 23rd, 2010, and welcome to Day 12. This is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. If you would like to be a part of the program today with your comments, questions, clarifications, comments, observations, musings, ruminations, myths, superstitions, curses, allegations, things left unsaid. Is that an oatmeal cookie?
It is.
Is that an oatmeal cookie with banana?
It is indeed.
All right. Are you just going to bring things now that you know I won't eat? Is that the deal? Just going to bring cookies you know I don't like?
You're just jealous and sad that
you
cannot eat
so
my delicious
cruel
banana oatmeal chocolate chip cookies. It's big, giant chocolate chips.
The best part is how, as we were just beginning the program, I looked over and it was like you had an entire satchel of cookies over there.
No, I just had two cookies, but they're in a really big bag.
I mean, it's just a massive bag. It's like one of those huge Ziploc freezer bags.
Yeah, it's one of those gallon-size...
Are those both banana cookies?
They are.
That's fine. That's fine. If that's how it's going to be, little Missy, Rick Emerson can play that game.
Well, you know, you could just get over your banana thing and give it a try.
You get over my banana thing. Hey. Yeah. All right. Have I ever played you that Steven Tyler clip?
No.
I got to find it. I will find it today before the program is over. I'll find this clip of Steven Tyler talking about love in an elevator. God's punishing you right now by making your arm fall off or whatever's happening to you. Is that your rotator cuff?
It is.
You know, that's happening because you're an evil person, Don.
Because okay. I'm eating a cookie that you don't want?
Yes. Yes. And also for blasphemy.
Wouldn't it be evil if, like, say, I had a cookie that you do want and I was eating it in front of you and not giving you one?
I suppose. Or if you were to give me that cookie and not tell me that it was banana.
Yeah.
I'm going to buy banana.
Listen, I'm just eating something you don't want. So how is that harming you in
any way?
Why
would you bring something into the studio that I can't take from you? That's wrong. That's not how it's supposed to be, Don. Yeah, that's fine.
By the way, Bruce Agler emails, he takes issue with some remarks you made previously in Legion of News about there not being any snow.
I didn't say there wasn't any snow at all. I said that there wasn't any... But see, now I'm being... fine, I don't care. I'm just saying... Now I'm being painted into being that guy, and I'm really not that guy. I'm saying... There is snow, and I'm not trying to say that just because there's more snow somewhere. Look, just because there's the Antarctic doesn't mean that winter in Fargo, for example, doesn't suck. It does. And just because there's Fargo doesn't mean there isn't a lot of snow in Utah sometimes. There is. There is, on occasion, lots of snow in the Northwest. I'm just saying that Portlanders, specifically in this case, now, I wasn't in Seattle. I don't know what's going on up at the passes or, whatever's happening in Washington State. I'm saying in the bulk of Portland right now, it's pretty dry. And if it's wet, it's not because there's snow. It's because there's rain. And I would say this morning, not even frozen rain, just rain. So the idea that we're somehow in the middle of, like, Hellstorm 2010 is just wrong. That's just inaccurate.
Well, Bruce emailed to say, what do you mean no snow? ? We've got almost an inch up here, all frozen over now.
Times is hard. How do you manage? All right, whatever. I can't even tell if he's being, sarcastic. And it's not like it's Hoth cold or anything out there. It's just regular cold. All right, well, in any event.
No need to rip open your tauntauns.
That's what I'm saying. All right, it's 503-505-6964. Let me do the great on-turning of the phones, and there we go. That's awesome. Nobody even knows. Do you even know why I say the great on-turning?
No.
Do you even know where that's from?
No.
All right. It's from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, when they're building Deep Thought, the computer, and the narrator of the book begins that chapter by saying, on the day of the great on-turning. And that's right, as they're beginning to fire up Deep Thought and to give him the, oh, great computer, we want you to give us the answer. And then Vroonfundel and Magic Thighs appear, and they demand that it be stopped.
My God, you're a geek.
Yes, I am. We are representatives of the Collective Association of Thinkers, Sages, and Other... Anyway, it's 503-505-6964. You'd like to join us. You can also text to that number if you like. That is our Skype message number. It's our user identification code. Whatever, our name. It's Rick Emerson Show is how you get all of us here at Skype. Rick Emerson Show. You can also do it via the text box at rickemerson.com, or you can email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. That is rick@rickemerson.com. Dawn Taylor can be reached. That is Dawn, D-A-W-N, @rickemerson.com. Dawn@rickemerson.com. This message just says, my patio is a sheet of ice. We still have snow on the ground. Tell Rick he can shut it, is what he can do. All right, thank you. Thank you for joining.
Somebody also emailed to share something. This is the second time today I've heard this phrase from completely different sources. A new term that is making the rounds regarding the TSA gropings is gate rape.
Gate rape. That's really good.
Yeah.
And it has a certain linguistic snap to it as well. It's the two hard consonants, the gate rape. Wow. Okay, well done. Gate rape. And it rhymes. I never even put together the date rape thing. I was just thinking about how great it sounds just linguistically, just in terms of the verbosity of it. All right, well done, whoever that is. Whoever came up with that. Ooh, I wonder if gaterape.com is taken. I'm calling dibs on that right now. I'm not going to have a chance to, like, look for 20 minutes or so. If somebody buys gaterape.com, I swear to God, right now, that you got to hold that for me. Rick Emerson will reimburse you. I'm just saying, that's got to be taken. All right, it's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Coming up later on the day, we'll also have your Hick Watch. We got your Taser Watch. Talk about Sunday's Walking Dead. So I didn't realize until yesterday that we've only got the 4 episodes of Walking Dead. I thought we were that it was a whole 13-episode season, but no, I say. It's 6, which is exactly what they did with Breaking Bad, but that's because of the writer's strike.
Yeah, this is just enough to just whet your appetite, to get you sucked in, and then they cut you off. Cut off your supply.
And the thing is, that didn't work out so well for V. Nibbler was saying that yesterday. They did it with V, and then I think it's going to... I don't even know if V ever came back. Did they ever return for like a second season?
Maybe.
I don't know. See, that's the thing is, I have no idea.
I only made it through the first 3 episodes of that, though, and I just kind of was like, eh.
Now, did you only make it the first 3 episodes because the show wasn't very good, or because you knew it was only like 6 episodes and you thought, why should I watch something now that's going to end in like another month?
I just wasn't interested.
You weren't feeling it.
Yeah, I just wasn't feeling it.
All right. And I was a huge fan of the original V. And now we're talking about a TV series that's been off the air for like a year and a half. But I was a big fan of the original V. Not so much V, the final battle, but what are you going to do? I got the V. Have you ever seen the V? Have you ever seen the V DVD with the optional commentary that's got the full-length feature commentary?
No, indeed.
It's awesome. It's Kenneth Johnson, who's the guy who wrote and directed V. He does a full-length... here's something that I could do without. I could do without... This is such a lame, like, first-world complaint. I could do without DVD commentaries that are just the guy telling you what you're watching. Well, this is the sequence where John walks down the hall, and you can see here he's picking up a chair. Now he's going to go in. He's going to tell Martha the baby isn't his. And here, of course, an outdoor shot. We're in the park here. He's walking on some grass, and you're sitting there going
We spent about an hour lighting this.
Yeah.
It was hard to light this.
It's a Panaflex lens here. We have the full... some people think it's an anamorphic lens. It's not. It's a pseudo-anamorphic
lens. Jim didn't really like the pants he's wearing in the scene. We tried to get him some new pants, and we couldn't find him any other pants.
Something we were going to film here. We ended up not filming it. It's we were going to have a calliope in the background. It's not there. And you're just going, goddamn Spike Lee, what am I watching this for? He's the worst. Spike Lee is the worst at that. All of his commentaries are basically like he's closed captioning it for the blind or something. You're sitting there going like, I just watched the movie. I've seen it. Yeah. I could do without directors also. Here's something else, and I have no reason for doing this this little riff right now, but it just occurred to me. I don't even know why. It's because you were talking about V and Kenneth Johnson. I'll work my way back here in a second. Okay. It's a vacation week. F it.
We don't have to leave at any specific time today,
no.
So this show could go on for
Greg
hours.
Greg and Sarah are already gone, baby. I could be here until 9. Doesn't matter. Here's the other thing, though, is directors who do the commentary for the DVD, and they are somehow operating under this assumption that you may not have actually watched the film, that you're choosing to start with their commentary before you watch the movie, because they're so interesting. And so as a result, you get things like, it wasn't John Frankenheimer, it was... I forget who it was. I was watching. It was a director of some renown. The guy was of note, and he actually said at several points during the commentary, "Now I don't want to. I won't talk too much about this scene in case you haven't watched the movie. I don't want to spoil anything." And I'm like, jackass.
Why would I be watching the movie for the first time with you talking over it?
Because he's the auteur, Don. Because he's the director, and he's the most important thing about it. Because they think they're so unbelievably interesting as the director that you would watch the commentary first. And also, Hey, Dick, even if I'm watching it for the first time, you know, I'm watching it. I'm still watching it right now. Like, you can talk about the thing. You know, it's not like I just have put your commentary on my iPod and I'm carrying it around. I'm going to listen. What are you going to do today? Are you going to do something fulfilling? No, I'm going to listen to the commentary for a movie I've never seen. It'll be awesome. No one does that, so just stop it. Just like just a default setting, they should just have us do the commentary for that. If they can't find anybody or you get those commentaries from the director who clearly doesn't want to be there, but it's like they made him do it, and he's just sitting there for long periods of time with nothing to say, and they haven't even thought to put an intern in the room with him to go, have you heard any good jokes, or something, just to keep the conversation going a little bit.
Well, actually, they have the ones where they just can't get anybody good.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's the production designer and, like, the second unit director.
Serious Foley artist.
And you're going, really?
Yeah.
Why? On the other hand, though, one of my very favorite directors to do commentary for his films is John Sayles. If you ever pick up, like, one of his movies, like Lone Star or The Secret of Rowan Inish or something, his commentary tracks are so good. They are... It makes sitting through the movie a second time like a whole new...
experience.
Completely separate entertainment experience, because he gives you just enough of, like, the technical stuff and the behind-the-scenes and the stuff about the writing and the casting and his thoughts of what's going on and, like, story background and just all kinds of stuff. And it's all very scene-specific, and it's all... going along with what you're watching, and it's so good.
Two best commentaries ever made for a DVD. Go.
Cannibal the Musical and Big Trouble in Little China.
Okay, F you, because I was going to say Cannibal the Musical. So you and I are on the same page there. Cannibal the Musical, which is one of my favorite movies, for lots of reasons. Because it's the same thing. It's sort of like, it makes you feel like a loser, and it's also inspiring at the same time, because they made it when they were like 19. This is Trey Parker, Matt Stone of South Park fame. It's their first project, and Trey Parker actually got kicked out of school because he cut so much class to make it. But it is a Oklahoma-style musical about Alfred Packer, who was convicted of cannibalism. They are the only successful example of this, by the way, ever, where they said, hey, let's really get really drunk and record a commentary for a movie, which never works. There's no one else who does it, because you've just seen like a billion movies. I'll take it back. It sometimes works with Kevin Smith. Kevin Smith's crew, you can tell that they occasionally get really loaded as they're watching a film, and that sometimes works. It's a little bit of a mixed bag there. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. It works with the Cannibal the Musical thing. This is a fantastic commentary. So I'm with you with that. The other one, my other favorite commentary is the feature-length commentary for Boogie Nights by Paul Thomas Anderson, where he is clearly... on, like, rails of cocaine, just, like, speeding out of his mind, and drinking, by the way, because at several points you hear him jiggling either a glass that is full of ice and nothing else, or putting down an empty can of beer and just saying, could I get another one of these? Which is to whoever's in the room serving him. And he actually, I'll have to bring it into somebody, but he actually starts the commentary, and it's just him. It's not him and anybody else, not him and his producer. It's just him in a mic, in a room with a mic, and watching the movie, and he actually starts the commentary, but just going on, it comes up with the New Line logo or whatever on the screen, and then you hear Anderson you finish him actually swallowing the last mouthful of some drink, and he goes, all right, F it, let's go, because I'm going to tell you. And then it's like a nonstop torrent of words, like for 3 hours. It's just freaking genius. So
the Big Trouble in Little China commentary, it's John Carpenter and Kurt Russell. And
awesome.
They don't actually make any kind of... They never draw attention to the fact that they are drinking throughout the thing.
Right.
Until the very end of the commentary when they're saying their goodbyes. And one of them, like Kurt Russell, says, yeah, well, the beer was cold and the cigarettes were fresh.
Oh, you know, come on.
But the thing is, they're longtime friends, really good friends. And it's really obvious when they were making the commentary, neither one of them had actually seen the movie in a really long time.
Well, that's always really great.
And they're
great.
Just enjoying the hell out of it while they're remembering what it was like to make the movie and telling these anecdotes. And by the end of it, they just start like, remember him? Yeah, that grip. What was his name? Fat Jimmy. Yeah, he was married to that girl, worked at the real estate office. Yeah. And they start talking about their kids' soccer games and things. But it's really, really entertaining. It's like you're actually sitting around with them watching the movie.
See, those are the best, too, when it's like they are experiencing the movie and it's not somebody who's just jaded about it or somebody who's being forced into doing it, you know, by their publicist or, you know, by the studio or something, that they're really doing it and they're loving it, too, that they think it's awesome. Also, this, when you watch, now we're just talking about film commentaries, so hello, welcome to the program. have you ever done this? When you watch a commentary and where you realize, like, they're not making it up, but you just have no idea how they can remember the crap that they remember. And it's like a film from 25 years ago. I'm like, well, I remember on this morning I stopped and I had a great cruller at this place down the street. And also, do you remember how cold it was? And they go, yeah, it was real. That was the day that we had... That was the day that my wife came by the set, and she had the dogs with her, and it was really chilly outside. I remember one of the dogs had a sweater on, and you're just going like, "How in the name of God? Like, how do you even know that?" But clearly, they, you know, it's just, you know, so it's a great commentary. I'm not going to say it'll make or break a documentary, but it really is, you know, it's a thing that is a thing of joy. It really is. All right, so coming up today, we got none of that. I don't even know why I started talking about that. Oh, because of V.
Walking Dead to V to DVD commentaries.
Here's the thing about V. If you ever get the original miniseries V on DVD, Kenneth Johnson does the original series all the way front to back with commentary, which is long. I mean, it's like 4 hours because it was a miniseries. And, you know, even without commercials, it's over 3.5, and I think it's like 4:30. But he does the entire thing in what sounds like one take. And he could keep going. You get to the end, and he obviously still has more to say. He's like Frank Darabont, who just, you know, they turn on the mic, and he's just like, he just rolls. You know, so, in any event. Blah, 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 V, Walking Dead. So we'll talk about Dexter, or I will talk about Dexter from Sunday, which is mercifully near the end of its run for season 5. Hick Watch, Taser Watch, Don Taylor tracking the following headlines for you on this, whatever the hell it is, Tuesday.
Another jogger is groped on the Nike campus. Oprah gives away a metric buttload of stuff. And the backlash against TSA molestations is gaining momentum.
Awesome. And plus, we're using what phrase?
Gate rape.
Gate rape. There you go. Awesome. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Don't forget, if you want to get on board today, you can do that. It's 503-505-6964 503-505-6964. You can email it to rick@rickemerson.com. That is rick@rickemerson.com. And don't forget, we'll be here on Thursday. That is this coming Thursday, which is November 26th, for the Rick Emerson Show's Thanksgiving Spectacular. That is this Thursday. We'll be doing a Legion of News. While everybody else is pawning off shoddy reruns and the same old recycled crap, we'll be giving you brand new crap. That is this Thursday. We'll be doing Legion of News, as we always do, and then the Thanksgiving special. And by the way, at no point during the Thanksgiving special am I going to use the phrase Turkey Day.
Oh, good, because I hate that phrase.
I loathe that phrase. And the thing is, and I'm not saying that people do it like bad-naturedly or something, or that they're saying it to be obnoxious. It's just a thing people say, and I don't know why. It's just, I don't know why, I don't know from where that comes. I mean, it's just, you know, here's the thing about saying Turkey Day. Saying Turkey Day, it's like, I don't know, it's like people who say toodles or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or they say totes or tarjay. where it might have been moderately amusing at one point, but it's like that time has passed. So, you know, just stop. I have no context for this next thing. I just promised that I was going to play it, so I'll do it. Then we'll talk about whatever you did last night. Then we'll get into the news, and then we'll get to other things of that nature. As I promised, you know, screw it. I'll wait and I'll do it as soon. I'll do it right before we get into the news, because it's going to mean I have to drop the bed here, and we'll, you know, I don't want to get all behind. So this is the point in the program where I say, what did you do last night, Dawn? Because my last night was, you know, I don't know if it was interesting or not, but well, yours is probably more interesting. What did you do yesterday evening?
Well, actually, there really wasn't a whole lot. I just was, you know, working and writing stuff. Although I did this morning, my morning was interesting in that sometime in the middle of the night, while I was sleeping, I woke up and I felt like I had something in my eye. And that's always disturbing, as we've discussed before, when you somehow hurt yourself or something happens to you while you're asleep. Like, how can that happen?
And you think a spider crawled into your eyelid?
That's what Sarah said.
Oh, really?
It never occurred to me a spider had crawled into my eye.
Oh.
And
it's
Sarah
the first thing
said
I thought
that
of...
when I came in.
Okay, she and I didn't compare notes. I didn't even see her this morning. That is the first thing that occurred to me.
No, it never occurred to me that a spider was in my eye.
Ah.
But anyway, I was laying there in the dark at about 3 o'clock in the morning, like just sort of poking at my finger, at my eye with my finger, and doing whatever I was doing, trying to like make my eye feel better. And then finally just fell back asleep. And I got up this morning and did this whole thing where my husband was going to leave, and he came back in and said, I can't get the locks to unlock on the car. And I said, do you want me to drive you? And then I couldn't get the other car to start. And so that was all a big nightmare. And then I came in and I was trying to get my stuff together to leave if I was going to be able to leave. And I reached the point where I went to put my makeup on and I picked the mirror up and looked at myself and I looked like somebody had punched me in the eye. And for about 10 minutes, I didn't know why. I couldn't remember poking at my eye and having the thing in my eye at 3 o'clock.
Was it just your eye was all red?
Well, you can kind of probably still see it. It's kind of puffy. And
yeah, no, it's okay. So I thought you meant the actual eye, but it's around your eye. It's
yeah.
Like okay, so it's almost like where you would get a black eye.
Yeah.
And is it just because, were you trying to scratch your eye but just using the butt of your hand or something?
Yeah,
it's going bam, bam.
I think it was that thing where if you ever get like a hair like caught in your eyelashes,
yes,
and it's poking, and then so you reach up and you're kind of trying to pull it off, and I think
pulling off your eyelashes one by one.
I was doing that in the dark, half asleep, and so God only knows what I did. But yeah, I get up this morning and I look like someone punched me in my right eye.
Do you ever get that thing when you're asleep and it's like suddenly, for reasons that you can't quite quantify, you get just the series of itches? And it's like not even, not even like a mosquito bite or something. It's like you just get like an itch in the middle of your back and you do that and it's like you're like, ah, God damn it. And it's like, am I asleep enough to just fall asleep without scratching that?
Yeah.
No, it's going to keep me awake. All right, damn. And then you scratch it. And then it's like, then there's one on the side of your neck. And then there's one in your elbow. And then there's one in your nose. And suddenly you start thinking like, am I just going to itch all night? Because that's when you are asleep, when you're like half, you know, just into the land of slumber. Those, they just take on a life of their own. Now you're scratching. They take on a life of their own, you know, in your head. It's like when you start thinking about some puppy you got rid of when you were 5 and you begin weeping uncontrollably because it's 4 a.m. and it just, like, you're insane. So,
yeah. And then you're laying there just going, just ignore it and go to sleep. Just
yeah.
If I lay here long enough and I don't scratch it, then I'll fall asleep.
It's like ignoring,
ignoring
the slight pressure inside your bladder saying you have to use the bathroom. And you're like, no, I'm almost asleep. Bladder, damn it. You know, no, you have to use the bathroom. Bladder. You know, and then finally you just get up. And it's like, and it just sucks because it's cold and whatever. And then you're doing that thing of trying. You're like, how can I get to the bathroom without actually waking up? Trying to stay as asleep as possible while being awake enough that you don't end up covered in urine. You know, like you've just been gate raped or something. So there you go.
Yeah.
So that was, and then you, and we already talked about this last hour, so I won't pretend that I don't know about it. But then you woke up and your locks were frozen shut in your car, or on both your, because you have a car, but then you're borrowing somebody's car,
right?
And it was like this weird.
So the 20-year-old car, the locks are all frozen shut and couldn't unlock the car. The brand new borrowed car has the little beeper thing,
right,
the little clicky beeper thing. So that unlocked just fine and opened right up, but then the engine wouldn't turn over.
Awesome.
So it was like,
And then your windshield scraper is like inside the car that's locked.
Right.
Awesome.
And there was, and of course, I can't like even just use like, windshield wiper solution or something because it's all frozen,
right,
inside the thing. So I'm just like,
tell me you used your driver's license to scrape the
no,
car.
No, I actually just sat there and ran the engine with the defroster thing going. And blasting at the windshield, and then every once in a while would like hit the windshield wipers and like another 4 inches of frost would. And now, of course, like I'm sure at some point, Bobby, whose car I borrowed, is going to be listening to this archived show and going, I can't believe she was using the windshield wipers on the ice. She's destroying my windshield wipers.
Yeah, but that's what they're for.
You know.
And I, of course, have waited. I've done that thing of waiting too long to get my car tuned up for the winter. And so now I almost feel like I got to wait till we're in the middle of winter almost. Because if I do it now, it's like every jackass on the planet is going to be, you know, and I'm one of them, is going to be there like to get their antifreeze or to get their heater tweaked or whatever, you know, in their car. So now it's like I almost got to wait till January when the rush passes because I have the ass warmers in the car, which is like one of the greatest inventions in the world, really, just the seat warmers. But the thing is, the driver's side seat warmer doesn't work. It's the passenger side seat warmer. Driver's side seat warmer quit working, and I noticed it like during the spring. But then it was like summer, and I thought, I'll get it fixed. And, of course, I didn't. So now I get in the car, and I know this sounds like such an American complaint. But now I get in the car, and it's like the seat is the same temperature as the rest of the car. It's terrible. And there's nothing to warm my buttocks. I can't complain too loudly. But I will nonetheless. So I got to get that fixed at some point.
I had this bonding experience at the gas station on my way here, too, where I was getting gas, and I had to go in and give them the money. And I came out, and the adorable young man, and I do mean young, I think he's like 19 or something, asked me why I was limping. And I said, I got a bum knee. He goes, hey, I have a bad knee too. I've got a metal plate in my knee. He goes, man, it's hard when it's cold. I said, I know. I said, I have a titanium hip. And he's like, hey, my knee is titanium. And I was like, hey. And then he told me about how, like, it hurts in the cold when he plays rugby. And I said, I used to play rugby. And he's like, hey. And so we had this whole
That's from a Yahoo group.
We had this whole bonding thing about our metal parts and rugby.
This sounds dumb, but you have pins or whatever in your knee or your leg or something, right?
I have replacement hips.
But is it metal?
Yeah, it's a big, basically a ball and a big spike. That's the
ball and socket
ball
thing.
And then it's jammed down into my leg bone.
Now, does it get cold?
It does, and I never really. It took me a while to figure out that's what it was.
Does it hurt?
It aches.
But does it feel cold? Like, because I don't know if your bones can detect temperature.
They can. That's why it hurts.
So there's like you feel like a cold thing.
I don't know if it's really the bone, but you can feel it the ligaments and stuff.
Ugh.
It gets cold because weird. The house I used to live in was really, really old. And my office, I had like a big window on my left side right next to the computer. And I found like the first winter after I'd healed up after getting the hip replaced, I was sitting there working. And I was like, wow, that aches. Wow, why does that hurt so bad? And I realized I was sitting next to an icy cold window in the middle of winter. And I have a metal hip. And so, it is. It's not the worst thing, but it is just like when you say a bone deep ache. It is literally a bone-deep ache.
Well, I have none of those stories to compare. I'll just say this, that I had... I texted Cheryl about this between shows. I had a wake fail this morning. I woke up, and I didn't even... I woke up finally because Lara... Well, I have no explanation for this. It's just one of those things. We have two different alarm clocks. I was about my BlackBerry, but I have my iPhone, which the iPhone is... And it's like... I don't know if you ever use your iPhone as an alarm.
Yeah, I used it this morning.
What is your alarm tone?
The digital sound.
Okay, see, and I use the xylophone sound because it's like you're trying to find the thing that is loud enough to wake you up, but it is not so loud that you're going to just want to kill everybody.
And it's not so irritating.
And it's not cloying. And it's like, you know, because they have some of them really mellow, but it's like I never trust that it'll wake me up. So I have the xylophone, and it's like, and it's just the most hateful noise. It's just the worst noise on earth because I associate it, of course, with waking up. Do you have access to your...
Here's what you wake up to.
All right, so this is the...
Hold on. Well, it should be. There's this whole thing where you go... Tones. Okay, hold on.
It's an iPhone. Shouldn't you be able to think it? And it just appears on the screen.
I should. Okay, this is what I use for the alarm.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I could never use that. It's too jarring. See, that's the thing. I get something that's loud but not jarring,
which
is difficult. I do. See, now I'm getting like a whole Pavlovian, and so you get that thing, right? Like with the BlackBerry, it was worse with the BlackBerry because there was only like three tones to choose from for the alarm.
No.
Sorry. See, I don't want that either.
I was just resetting it for my ringtone.
With the,
it was either that or the robot. I thought about using the robot.
The robot's kind of interesting. But it's like with the BlackBerry, there were only like a handful of tones, like for the whole phone. Like there was only a handful of noises, period. And so you would inevitably end up in an office next to a cubicle where a guy had like your alarm clock as his ringtone.
Yeah.
So somebody would call him and you'd be like, oh, I'm up. Wait, I'm already up. What? And it was because the guy had the alarm going off or whatever. So for reasons unknown, my alarm didn't go off and I set it across the room. So I have to, and I don't hide it, but I put it across the room, like on a shelf underneath a thing. So I actually have to be awake enough to turn it off so I'm awake.
You're the guy they make that alarm clock that like
runs away from you.
Runs around on the floor.
Totally. Or you have to solve a math problem to turn it off or something. So I either didn't set it, which is unlike me because I'm all anal about that, or I turned it off and don't remember it, which is also unlike me. But then Lara has her own alarm clock, which we double-checked last night because she made a joke about how I have this whole OCD thing of having to – I have to check her alarm clock an odd number of times, like 3 or 5 or 7. Like I have to go, is it set? Yes. Is it set? Yes. Is it set? Yes. So it's like 3 I can, you know. And if I do it 4, then I have to do it 5. Like I have to check her alarm an odd number of times.
Yeah, okay.
So I know that it was set, and yet – neither of us woke up this morning. She missed an appointment, I think. I very nearly was late for the show because she woke me up half an hour before we had to be on the air. She's like, hey, you know you got to be on the air in half an hour and like funny and stuff, Mr. Jokey Man. And I was like, what do you mean? And she's like, baby, you got to be on the air in 28 minutes. I was like, ah, crap. And so I woke up and I'm the biggest dick in the morning when I'm such a jackass when I get woken up. So baby, if you're listening, I apologize. And it's her birthday, too, so I was rude to her on her birthday. Because I'm like, God damn it, mother effing stupid son of a... God, technology, stupid snow, and just waiting for it to be frozen and, you know, whatever. And just anticipating a horrible... And then she's like... And then she actually did the worst thing. She made me feel so terrible. She stands in the doorway of my office as I'm cursing and kicking the dog and kicking everything. And I wasn't really kicking the dog, but you know what I mean? I'm just angry. And she goes, and it's my birthday. And I just said... And I
love her so much.
I just said, I know it's your goddamn birthday. It'll be your birthday later. I have to go be funny. I was like putting my pants and just being all pissed off about everything. So that was how my morning started. It was a great day.
Oh, that's lovely.
That came, by the way, on the heels. Now we're just so hopelessly over time, it doesn't even matter. Screw it. I'll just say that came on the heels of last night where we had to take Philo to the vet because he's, you know... See, now it's her birthday, so I can't be mean to her. But Lars is such a hypochondriac with a dog. She just assumes... It's like with Max. Max could be bleeding from his eyes, but we just figure at this point he's impervious, you know, that he can't be killed, you know, even by his own hand, and he's tried. So it's like he just can't... He's just bulletproof in some way. But Philo is just like... He's such a conglomeration of weird parts and just... He's, you know, he's just like a stitching and, you know, he's like a Misfit Toys dog. And it... Anyway, so she's always figuring that there's something wrong with him, and she thinks there's a problem with his legs because they're basically big pool cues and, you know, and it's just... And I told her that he was fine or whatever, but so we go to the vet, and there really isn't anything wrong with him. But while we're there, the vet did bring up the idea of putting him on Prozac, which I swear to God I'm not making up. I think I actually have the prescription with me. But the vet, he's like, you don't have to fill it if you don't want to, but I'm going to write you a script for it. So he actually wrote us a prescription for Prozac for our freaking dog, because that doesn't make us, you know, pampered white people. So,
well, he does have a lot of issues.
I mean, he's anxious, but I mean, it's a world full of scary things. What are you going to do? He's not wrong. The world is fundamentally scary and you know, effed. I mean... Seriously, there's no good. I mean, look, it's a terrifying place, this world of ours. He maybe it's we who are crazy, you know. He might be right to be twitching and hiding, you know, underneath the covers for every conceivable noise that he hears, because cancer and garbage disposals will get you. There was a guy with a samurai sword freaking hacked his mother up this morning in that apartment while screaming about, you know, the Bible or something. It's a messed up world. So I think Philo might have the right idea. Also, they're giving us that whole like we got to take him in and have his teeth cleaned thing. Which it's like, I always, the thing is, have you had Bella's teeth cleaned?
No.
Do you know how much they want to charge for us to have Philo's teeth cleaned?
Well, are they going to give him anesthesia?
They claim that they do not do it any other way. They claim that there is no other way to do it.
Yeah.
Because they said
so
that they
used... So
it's
got to be like $300 or something, isn't it?
It's $385.
Yeah.
And I said, well, how much of that is anesthesia? And they claimed, understandably so, they said that they no longer do it without anesthesia because dogs... freak out. They get elevated heart rate, and then occasionally they'll bite people. And Philo would just, he would fall apart. He would just die. He would just fall into pieces if he had to be held down and have like a zzz thing inside his mouth.
Yeah, I had my my previous dog. I did have her teeth cleaned once while she was already under for something else.
Yeah.
Because it was like, you know, and well, you already got her knocked out.
Well, you got her
go
there.
Ahead and do it. But the thing is, there's so many things that can go wrong with anesthesia that it would make me nervous to knock the dog out just for the teeth cleaning.
And that's my thing, is I'm not going to do it with Max because he's, you know, he's a seasoned citizen of a dog. And also, you know, like, again, impervious. But it's like Philo was really young and I, you know, it is that thing of like, it can get into your bloodstream sometimes. You know, if you have like bad, you know, like the gunk in your teeth can get into your blood, which happens to people. So I don't know. I got to... Anyway, but the idea of just, you know, just for the record, I'm not going to be giving my dog Prozac because it's like, you know, because he's confused enough as it is. Like, that's the thing. Like, that was the other thing
That's the thing. He might be a lot less anxious and a lot less worried about things.
Maybe. I resisted the idea of the Prozac. Here's the thing about it, you know, and I'm not opposed to Western medicine in any way. I'm not some guy who's like some holistic nutcase where it's like, you know, you chemicals, they're bad. Chemicals are good. They're good for you. But it's, you know, but he's a dog. He can't tell you if he wants them or if they make him feel better or worse. And so when I resist the Prozac, then Lara, who's a nurse and who, you know, just, you know, and God bless her. But she and the doctor, of course, they're part of the same racket. And so they immediately jump to the whole like, what about Valium? And it turns out there's a doggy Valium as well. And it's like, he doesn't understand anything now. And I can't imagine if he was just doped up all the time. He'd just be sitting there just staring. And all he does now is stare blankly at crap, not understanding it. So it's like, what would the difference be? I guess he would just be doing that without the occasional like, ha!
And then if you gave him the Prozac and it didn't seem to really be working and you decided to take him off the Prozac.
Then he's got withdrawal.
If you take him off it too quickly, he could become suicidal.
He's a junkie. Then he's just all, you know, then he's boiling the cotton in the top of the bottle and trying to drink it, you know, so... All right, well, in any event, that's...
Philo chasing the dragon.
Yeah, I had something else I was going to talk about, but I don't even know what the hell it was. I'm just going to play the Steven Tyler cut, then we'll go right to the news. So this is Steven Tyler talking about his fine composition, Loving an Elevator, Living It Up While I'm Going Down.
Actually, I think you have played
this for me,
but it's worth hearing again.
It's always worth hearing again. I very nearly made this my ringtone, and then I realized that it would play in front of somebody that I didn't want to be horrible in front of. And then we'll go right to the news. Coming up later on, Walking Dead, talk about Dexter. We got your Hick Watch, Taser Watch, all of that. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. So this is Steven Tyler, captured, I don't know, in 1992 or something in an interview, talking about the real-life story that led to the creation of the Aerosmith ditty, Love in an Elevator. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Mr. Steven Tyler.
And you know that commercial where the chocolate meets the peanut butter? our heads met. And the other girl, by the way, was pushing the buttons of every floor, you know, because she was totally inebriated. And suddenly, without notice, the doors opened up and we were in the lobby. And she was buns up and kneeling. I was a wheeling and a dealing. And so I had to write it down, right? Memoirs.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Yeah.
He's so lovable. That's the thing. It's like if he wasn't such a good-natured sprite, he'd be the most repellent human being on Earth. Because he looks like a lab experiment.
Yeah.
And he's just sleazy, like, about everything all the time. But it's just with his good-natured gleam in his eye. Just sort of a, like, you know, life is for the living, kids. I'm Steven Tyler. Oh, there you go.
Mm. All right. The Beaverton Police Department said a jogger was grabbed from behind by a cyclist on Monday evening near
Again
the
with
Nike
the grabbing.
Campus and the bicycles.
Jesus.
The 29-year-old woman said she was jogging westbound on the south side of Southwest Walker Road near Southwest 150th Avenue when a man rode up from behind and grabbed her legs and breasts. The victim said she pushed the...
Both of them? Both legs? Both breasts?
Maybe he grabbed legs and then breasts or... A breast
was she
with one hand and legs the other.
Vishnu?
I don't know, because he's on his bike at the same time.
Uh-huh.
He's a Cthulhu monster with tentacles.
Was he on a unicycle?
The victim said she pushed the suspect away, yelled for help, and ran over to the Union 76 station to call for help. The suspect was wearing a brownish-green hoodie with a small triangle-shaped reflective emblem on the back and a black beanie covering his face.
I don't know. Let me ask you this. Can I ask you a question about apparel?
Sure.
What is a beanie? I think of that thing with the propeller on it.
Yeah, I do too. I think what they mean are just the little caps.
Because I have like a pull down, you know, like a cap that I wear when it gets really cold because I have, you know, largish ears. And whatever. So it's like the Alcatraz walk in the yard hat. And I heard somebody refer to, oh, you have a beanie. And I said, I don't have a goddamn, you have a, your mom's a beanie. And I got all offended by it because it's like, I just pictured the stripey thing with the propeller. And it's like, and clearly that's not what it is. But so it's just a hat with no flaps, no ornaments on it. No, bill or anything.
Like the, that hat I brought in that one day that you said it looked like I,
like Paddington Bear. Like
you actually said I looked like I'd been undergoing chemo.
Oh yeah. Okay. So that's
I
a beanie.
That's a beanie.
All right. Okay. Fair enough. All right.
Is this the hat that you said I look like Paddington Bear?
Maybe. Do you have a hat with a flower on the side of it?
No.
Okay. I'm thinking of something else then. I'm thinking of Dorothy Parker. Yeah, maybe that's the hat. Although, I don't think Paddington would be wearing a leopard print.
No, I was
that would
wearing
be creepy.
This the other night.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah, the beanie had like a little Day of the Dead guy.
Yeah, no, yeah, that's the, okay, so that's a beanie. All right, okay. Yeah. So this guy was wearing a beanie, and then he was groping apparently her entire body at one while also riding a bicycle.
Yeah, a red mountain bike.
I'm not saying she's making this up, but I'm saying it sounds like the story maybe she in the retelling may have maybe overstating it. Maybe she's remembering it more dramatically than it actually happened.
Yeah, I don't know how you grab breasts and legs while someone's running and you're on a bicycle.
That's, yeah, because she's a moving target. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
Look, I don't mean to be this guy. Do we know for sure that this is really happening? That it's not like some collective psychosis? I'm not saying she's making it up, but I mean, stranger things have happened.
It's like UFO abductions.
Somebody threw acid on me. You know?
Yeah.
I'm just saying. It doesn't add up. There is something not making sense about at least this incident. So it is always possible. Now, I am not saying this is the case. But in my constitutionally protected opinion, it's always possible that somebody says, well, I'm crazy and I need attention. Maybe I'll just say that thing happened to me. So, who knows? We should try some Mythbusters thing where you put me on a bicycle and then you have somebody running and then I try to grope them while going past.
Okay. We'll do that.
Yes. We try to hide stuff behind my junk.
Well, Sarah's bicycle is right here. And
yeah, but
we
you're
just
the only person
here.
Have
to find someone for you to grope.
Yeah, I was going to say you're the
only
one.
Well,
yeah,
and I don't want you groping me.
Well, see, I didn't even think about that. You can't ride a bike, though, probably.
No, and I can't be groped and like videotape it at the same time so that we can see how it works.
Well, I suspect if we were going to have you
we'll
grope,
multiple
we'd have a volunteer
for
the videotaping. That's someone would appear to take a picture
but
of that.
You're not groping me.
Okay, all
that's
right.
Not happening.
Okay.
Okay.
You know that commercial where the chocolate meets the peanut butter?
I was trying to go to the yeah thing, but I don't have
still don't understand the chocolate, the peanut butter part of this story.
I think he's talking about the sex.
Uh-huh.
He's the chocolate, I think.
Yeah, but in the chocolate and the peanut butter commercials, it was sort of like some kind of happy accident where the chocolate and the peanut butter collide. And it turns out to be nice.
So you're saying it was like an accident. It would have to be an accidental sexing.
Right.
Like a drive-by sexing.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, no. I'm going to excerpt just the yaya part for later.
It's not
on,
like the chocolate in the elevator, the chocolate and the peanut butter get into an elevator together and then are aroused.
I suppose that probably isn't what's happening. You're
although
right.
Although that might actually be where Reese's Peanut Butter Cups come from.
It's probably not the case. All right. Here's Don Taylor.
On Oprah's final Favorite Things episode, which was so large it took 2 days to reveal everything, audience members were stunned to learn they were getting the redesigned 2012 Volkswagen New Beetle, even though no one has actually seen the new-look Beetle. There was some speculation that the Beetle would be at the Los Angeles Auto Show last week, but it will go on sale in the spring, according to Oprah. In September 2004, Oprah gave the entire audience keys to the then-new Pontiac G6, and it stirred a little controversy because she didn't pick up the sales tax for all those new cars.
That was going to be my question about the Volkswagen. So they're going to get hit with the taxes on that?
Quite possibly. According to CNN, Harpo Productions said in 2004, the sales tax would be the responsibility of the audience members. They could choose to pay the taxes or sell the car and pay the taxes out of the proceeds, or just decline the car entirely. There has been no mention so far about how the sales tax for the Volkswagen Beetles is going to get paid. There's a list of all of the things they got, including diamond earrings, two $500 gift certificates to Nordstrom's.
Okay, no, there's no S on the end of that. There is no S on the end of Nordstrom.
Oh, I'm sorry, to Nordstrom's lingerie department.
Okay, all right. I was going to be very shocked and disappointed if you had actually said Nordstrom's there, okay. Sincerely. Okay.
A book by a guy named Mark Nepo, Johnny Mathis CD, called Let It Be Me. Is that a new CD?
I don't
know. Is Johnny Mathis still alive?
See, I don't know. I was just going to ask you. Hey, is Dom DeLuise still alive?
No.
You're sure?
Yes, I am sure he's not. I'm sure he died.
Okay. All right. Johnny Mathis. No, I believe he's dead.
Yeah. Okay. Miracle Body Jeans by Miracle Suit.
By Miracle Suit. What a sad product that is. You can tell it's a sad product just from the name. That's like, think about what that's implying, that you are so obese that it takes a miracle to make you look presentable. That it actually takes a miracle, which is, you know, like raising Lazarus from the dead, reversing cellular decay. I mean,
wow.
Animating dead bodies back to life. That's a miracle. Turning water to feeding a multitude with loaves and fishes. Jesus being killed and being dead for 3 days and then ascending into heaven, surrounded by angels, seen by everyone in the entire town. That's a miracle. You're now, so fat, your ass is so gigantic that it takes that level of production to slenderize you.
Now, do you know that Miracle Body Jeans will not raise someone from the dead?
Well, to be fair, it's not like I've tested it in laboratory settings or something.
Do you know that they are not actually literally designed to put on dead bodies and then bring them back to life?
I guess it's possible. I mean, science does amazing things. Wait, we hear about every 3 weeks we have the story about the goddamn invisibility cloak that they've invented. So who's to say?
Although I imagine if they could do that, it wouldn't be like in the middle of this list.
I mean, they ought to just make a Harry Potter cloak for your ass at some point. I mean, that's the thing, right? I mean, it's like, you know, not for your ass. I'm just saying, like, in general.
Now, my ass could use some kind of a cloak.
But I mean,
I admit that.
Rather than just slenderizing jeans, which are just a truss, by the way, it seems like it's dangerous because it's compacting your insides. Really, when you think about it, it is like a Death Star garbage compactor for your ass and presumably then like your kidneys and your lungs and everything. Why don't they just make it like a Romulan cloaking fabric? What are these? They're my Romulan cloaking jeans. And then half of your ass just vanishes.
Yeah, we had our photo shoot thing on Sunday.
Yes, we did.
And I wore a skirt, and which and meant I needed to put on my black tights. And the last time I went to buy a pair of black tights, I went to the fat lady store, went to the Avenue or something. And the only black tights they had in the store, they had stockings, but I didn't want stockings. I wanted actual tights, like opaque tights. Only tights they had were the Spanx tights, which, first of all, they ended up costing me like $30. And putting them on is like, it's like I'm trying to squeeze a giant water balloon into a sausage casing. It's like the most humiliating experience. And thank God I do it alone in my bedroom with no one around and no one is watching this happen. But actually, like, squeezing, you know, my rotund little frame into Spanx stockings is just... It's just horrifying. It's just a horrible thing.
It's just weird. I mean, it's just that, you know, that
And it's not like when you're round like I am, it's actually making me look thin. That's the thing. If I was somebody who just like was maybe 10 pounds overweight and had a tummy, you know, yeah, Spanx is awesome because Spanx will, because they are basically a girdle.
Then they're like control top.
They're bicycle shorts basically. And so yeah, that would be awesome. But I am a sphere with a head on top. So it's not like the Spanx are suddenly making me look slender.
This is like when I'm hold on a second, I have to apply this summer bisque bare minerals as though it's going to somehow make me look, you know, like matinee idol style, which doesn't, I mean, it's like the enshrinking of my nose, which is not possible, by the way. There's just no way. There's no makeup that is going to – and they'll lie to you about it, too. Like when you sit in the makeup chair or something and they'll do the, hold on, I'm just going to minimize your nose. There's no minimizing the nose. It's not like a Windows icon or
like
something.
Steve Martin and Roxanne
in
the drugstore.
With the shading
down the side.
Oh, it's not going to work. By the way, and so at some point in the near future, y'all will see we have some – because we – and I've actually had requests for this. People have said, you know, there's a photo – there's basically like some photos of me that I already had. And then there's some photos of you that you already had. But there are no photos of us together or of, like, Cheryl Kennecoa or Bruce Agler. We have no company photos. We were getting some holiday stuff taken. So we'll have some group photos because people have actually said that they're like, hey, I'd like to see, you know, the rest of the gang or, you know, see all of you together or whatever or some picture. I might actually just take some pictures of sort of our operation here to post. But it's like, so Jason is taking the – Jason Crump of VanishedTwin.com is taking these photographs. And then, you know, looking – and we basically – I mean, God, we're just the palest freaking people on earth, first of all. I mean, it's like an Addams Family Christmas, basically, is what those are going to look like.
Well, yeah, and then we went with this whole black
None of us consulted, thing. By the way. None of us got together and said, like, what should we wear? So we all showed up wearing black.
Well, Cheryl did tell me that we were going for sort of a black and gray monochrome kind of
yeah.
a
Yeah. Oh, well, mission accomplished.
It's like we all own tons of black clothing. So
we are all dressed head to toe essentially in black clothing. We are all milk white. I mean, it's you know, and of course, you know, we're doing this, you're trying to, you know, getting a little bit of a 60s look there. So it's going to be that high contrast thing where we're just going to look like we're going to look like sheets of blank paper that have been hastily stuffed inside black wrappings. So, I mean, it's basically going to be like a New Yorker cartoon sort of arriving, you know, if we send those photos to anybody.
Yeah, basically, if the mafia was made up of vampires,
that's really
that
it.
Would be us.
Jesus. All right. Here's Don Taylor. Do come over here and we'll take a break.
The backlash against airline passenger pat-downs is gaining momentum as the holidays travel rush swings into full gear. Utah Republican Congressman Jason Chaffetz says the threat is very real, but the TSA needs to stop targeting innocent Americans.
Let's do what the Israelis do. Let's start profiling terrorists. We got to go after the terrorists.
See, here's the problem with that, though, is that in Israel, I mean, something, you know, toilet paper stand is on you, whatever. I feel like there's no, I don't have any equivalent. There's no in Soviet Russia thing you could do with in Israel. Because no. It always just ends with, I don't know. I don't know. There's not even any joke there. I don't know where I'm going with that. In Israel, in my country.
I
don't know.
I don't know.
I got nothing. What was I going to say? It stands to reason, though, like that makes a little bit more sense for Israel because, I mean, now this is a generalized statement, but I do believe that this is true to a much greater degree than is true here. In Israel, I would say it's a fair statement to say that you, by and large, kind of know what the guys who are trying to blow your country up look like. To a greater degree, I think, than here. I mean, that's the thing about having such a heterogeneous makeup in this country, you know, where it's, you know, it's, I mean, you know, Israel is not like, it's not like an exclusively Jewish country, but I mean, you know, that is the vast majority of the population, just like, you know, Turkey is 98%, Muslim, you know, and in America, it's just like, because of the whole, you know, because we're not really even like a melting pot. We're basically just like this weird sort of like a 75 bean salad or something. So as a result, we had all kinds of people who hate us. I mean, we just attract enemies of just every – I mean, yeah. it's sort of a mark of how cool we are, actually, that it's not just one part of the world that occasionally, once it's dead, it's like almost everyone because we are just so multifaceted and multicultured here that we manage to offend at some point everyone in the rest of the world. So there really is kind of no telling what the enemy looks like.
Well, I think when a Republican congressman from Utah says that we should start targeting terrorists, what he means is – let's start searching all the brown people.
Right. And on the one hand, it's like you could say, because the Tyner guy, the don't touch my junk guy, so something he said during that encounter that has actually not gotten a lot of play, I think because people are trying to, because he has that whole, he's like the guy in the airplane that said, like, F this, and like grabbed the beer and jumped on the slide and became a folk hero.
Yeah.
We are always looking for folk heroes in this country. America is a country, we are always looking for like the guy that is standing up and speaking for all of us. America loves nothing more than some like proxy, some proxy grump who, you know, bitches out somebody on our behalf, some Howard Beale type. And, you know, and they're trying to make this Tyner guy the next version of that, so that I think they're underplaying or underreporting some aspects of the story, like the fact that he actually said, I don't look like a terrorist, which means he's going, I'm white. I mean, that's obviously what that means. Now, on the other hand, you can't have it both ways. I mean, it's like they can either the media and the government can either tell us to be terrified of brown people or they can tell us to be open-minded, about what we view a terrorist as. They can't do both because that's why he says that, because the government has spent the last 10 years telling him to be afraid of brown people.
Well, yeah, and then the whole just literally randomly screening people is in its way kind of ridiculous because, as you talked about the Hulk Hogan thing,
right.
I remember when they first started post 9/11, they first started the random screening of just – you know, grabbing every 17th person out of line or something.
Right.
You know, one of the people they pulled out of line was Kelsey Grammer.
Also Ted Kennedy.
Like, really, do you think Kelsey Grammer is a terrorist? You really think he's got a bomb on him? Kelsey Grammer.
Now, I mean, that takes away from the time he could be rolling cars with 16-year-olds inside. But yeah, it was Ted Kennedy, Al Gore. Same thing. They pulled Al Gore aside. And it's like, and Al Gore, he said later, he said the greatest thing. He said, said, well, I was trying really hard not to say, do you know who I am? But, I mean, I'm Al Gore, you know, which is just sort of, I mean, it, you know, it's kind of great. The whole thing is just, I don't even... Yeah. Okay.
Well, Chaffetz says the new tougher TSA security screening procedures are unfair to the American public.
Americans are being given a false choice. That is, give up every liberty in the name of security. And look, I want the planes to be as secure as possible, but we should demand that technology be more effective and less invasive.
He's who? He's
Americans
from Utah?
Are be given a tough choice. Is that what he said?
Americans no be learning
yes.
proper verbiage.
Is he a Republican congressman from Utah?
It's funny because he sounds like he might be a stylish dresser.
Americans are being given a false choice. That is, give up every liberty in the name of security. And look, I want the planes to be as secure as possible, but we should demand that technology be more effective and less invasive.
Doesn't it seem like he might be a belt matches the socks kind of guy?
And we need to insist that technology be more fabulous.
That's, I'm just saying, he sounds a little spangly to me.
Chaffetz explains how he says the procedures could be a lot less invasive and a lot more effective.
What we should be doing is put people through a metal detector
and
have them walk by a bomb-sniffing dog.
Oh, okay.
Then do a great big show-stopping number.
Wow. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-505-6964. Let's see if I've got the... There we go. Awesome. I just wanted to make sure I had that isolated. I'm going to find numerous uses for that later on. That and the buns up and kneeling, I was a wheeling and a dealing. And it's like, I'm not even really sure what that means.
No, but he just says that stuff and he makes it sound awesome.
He makes it work. That's the thing.
It's and like, he makes it sound like he just thought of it just then.
Yeah, like he really sells it. I mean, that's the great thing about Steven Tyler. This is all true. All right. By the way, somebody just says... naming the Spanx is the part that makes me uncomfortable. Is it S-P-A-N-X?
Yes.
See, it's an awkward sounding product, don't you think?
Yeah.
Isn't it just? Yeah. I mean, it's just a thing. It just sounds oogie, you know, in some way that I can't quite quantify. Let's see here. Somebody wanted to clarify that Turkey Day, by the way, was made popular by the crew of Mystery Science Theater 3000. It was the title given to their old somebody who's, by the way, whose online name is Skin Trade.
Hmm.
Do not want.
Maybe they deal in beaver pelts.
Uh-huh. Was the title given to their all-day Thanksgiving marathon on Comedy Central. Boy, I miss those. That was, I know I sound like an old guy, but goddamn.
Oh, I do remember that. Yeah.
The, let's see, and then somebody else just, because they used to have Adam West host those. And he would do the, you're watching the Turkey Day Marathon. And, you know, and he would just be sitting in the kitchen trying to, you know, whatever. This one just says, Emerson, you're a complete knee-biter. Thank you. It's 503-505-6964. Thanks for being part of today's program. Don't forget, the Rick Emerson Show today and every day is brought to you by a series of fine business partners, including our good friends at Castalia Language Center. So a lot of people are doing traveling over the holidays. Maybe you are traveling to a far-flung land of sun and shine and surf and sand and whatever. Maybe you're going somewhere where the glorious golden ball of light at the center of our universe continues to rain down its warmth upon you. If you're going somewhere where you're going to be speaking Spanish or where you would be better served by speaking Spanish, well, first of all, probably too late now. But the next time you do this, the next time you travel, or whether you're going to be moving somewhere, living somewhere, you're going to be speaking Spanish, or it would be advantageous to do so, or if you just, you know, if you just don't want to be like your doddering grandfather who's walking around the house with his spectacles on his head going, where are my spectacles? If you want to try to keep your brain working and working properly, keep it in fighting trim, as they say, a few better ways to do that than learning another language. So, and you may ask yourself, how is this class different from those I took in high school? Then, you know, the reality is that when you take a Spanish class in high school, or at least at a certain time, and they may have changed that now because they teach kids Spanish, you know, very early, they just, you know, they just have you opening a textbook. And it's, you know, and just like looking at some crap on the page and memorizing it and then just speaking it aloud and then doing it later so you can pass a test so you can get a thing so you can go home and whatever. And it's, you know, and it's like they don't give you any content. You have no idea what it means. You don't even know if it's accurate. You're not using it in a conversation. It serves you like not at all. So Castalia Language Center realized that that was the problem, that was why it's why people think that learning a language is so difficult. And you'll hear people say, I don't have any facility with languages. Which, just using that phrase kind of gives the lie to that statement. I mean, if you can use the phrase, I don't have any facility with languages, basically, if you can speak, you by definition have a facility with, like, a language. So learning Spanish conversationally means you can use it in conversation, means you can use it colloquially and casually. And just think of how impressive that you will look to the lady folk, let's say. If you are able to order something, you go to a restaurant where there's Spanish being spoken, you can order it fluently and you can look like a man of the world. You can look continental. You can seem even more stylish than you probably already are. And again, it just keeps your brain working. So you don't want to end up your life just having a smooth, foldless brain. You know, who wants that? No one. So I'm just saying, learn a language.
Wrap it in Spanx.
That's exactly. And then it's just a thing taking up space, and then it's just like so much cerebral packing peanuts. So learn another language. You stay smart. You can go to PortlandSpanish.com to find out more about Castalia Language Center. That is PortlandSpanish.com. PortlandSpanish.com, Castalia Language Center. Please tell me you heard it right here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Como? Bueno, déjame nomás subir a la acera para echarle un ojo. ¡Uy! ¡Qué bella! Me refiero a la Yankee Rose. Una rosa silvestre. ¡Salvaje! 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 ¿Quieren saber la más nueva noticia? Todo el mundo está hablando ya. Está de vuelta por aquí la famosa Yankee Rose.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. I just want to know whose idea the David Lee Roth Spanish thing was. Like, if it was his idea to expand into new markets, like the way that RJR Tobacco does, or if it was, like, his manager,
The record label?
Yeah, if it was...
We have this Spanish imprint, and we...
Seriously.
We could sell some records.
He's just sitting there with, his agent, So, Ira, what's up? What's the haps? Well, Dave, I got you a deal, and... hear me out. It's going to be a little... And then I'm just picturing him, because he did the whole album. It wasn't just that one single. Like, the entire Eat 'Em and Smile album, he did in Spanish. I've got the whole thing at home. As a listener whose name I always forget, and I feel like a jackass. Sorry. Sent me the whole thing. And it's like, I'm just picturing him with, like... And because it's David Lee Roth, I'm just picturing, in the studio, midgets holding up cue cards. Just one at a time as he's just, like, belting the whole thing out. We should just, You know what we should do is we should just every day, once we've done this show, we should then just go back and do it all again in Spanish. Ooh, or hire somebody to just recreate the show in Spanish. And then we could start selling a Spanish language version of the show on, like, on Rick Emerson 2 or something.
I like that.
All right.
I've got to make a note of that.
Just make a note. All right.
Whenever we finally get an intern, maybe we could get somebody who's bilingual. And they could help. They could translate select portions of the show.
I like the way you think. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Still to come, we'll do our Walking Dead recap, and we'll talk a little bit about Dexter. We still got your Hick Watch to get to, Taser Watch, and just a FYI, this is a heads up and or a warning. We've got a story about porn coming up, so everybody want to be leaning in closer or pulling further away, depending on your personal proclivities. This, however, is Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Zam.
Well, let's do our Hick Watch.
Excellent. Here is your Hick Watch for Tuesday, right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. There we go.
Copenhagen makes me feel so good. Copenhagen, the way I know it should. Well, I put a little chew in my mouth, go spitting, slobbering all around the house. That Copenhagen makes me feel so good.
Here is Dawn Taylor with your Hick Watch.
Police in Athens, Georgia, are hoping to identify a man who stole 9 sticks of deodorant from an Athens drugstore. The man walked into the store on Friday and grabbed 4 different brands of deodorant and stuffed them into his pants. Store employees hope video footage will help identify the man, who then ran out of the store.
See, this is why the other day there was that guy, he stole something, and it wasn't part of the story, but I just assumed that he'd stuffed whatever it was, like lobster or something, into his pants, because it's always with the pants stuffing. That's where guys put everything.
Well, this comes just a week after a woman stole 12 sticks of deodorant from the same store in Athens, Georgia. A store employee was able to grab the bag of deodorant from her. She had picked up a prescription and then stole 12 sticks of deodorant.
I think we all know what's happening here. Are you coming to the same conclusion I am?
No, I'm completely baffled by this.
All right. I will see. This is what I almost want to see. I almost want to wait and see if everybody else comes to the same conclusion, but I figured this out. Here's you know what has happened is that somebody somewhere has figured out that there's something there that can be boiled and isolated and made into meth. That's got to be what it is.
Out of deodorant?
I mean, because you think of it, it's just chemicals, right? It's just a bunch of chemicals in a tube. It never would have occurred to me to take, like, bleach and matchsticks or whatever and reduce it and then snort it or smoke it or something. Like, I never – but I mean, you and I both know this. There's nobody who is as determined and resourceful as a junkie. I mean, that is when they say, you know, like, one doesn't necessarily have to be dumb, to be a drug user or a drug seller. And in fact, some of the most motivated people I know have been drug users because they will find a way to either get something new to get high or to fabricate whatever it is they need to get high, which is why they end up having to take more and more stuff off the market. Like, I mean, because you would, I mean, you know, old person thing again. When I was a wee lad, you could go to the store and they would sell you. They would sell you basically ephedrine or pseudoephedrine or speed in various combinations. Like, doesn't matter, but like you could buy those Primatene things by the fistful.
Yeah.
And it was just an amphetamine because there wasn't, you know, there wasn't somebody making meth out of it. But as soon as they needed that, they started taking it off the market. Then they took all the weight loss products that had it off the market. Then they started making, taking Sudafed off the market itself. And then now it actually is matches. In Utah, you can actually not have a certain number of matches in your trunk or they will bust you for the intent to make meth.
That's bizarre.
It is. So I will guarantee you that somebody has figured out, maybe incorrectly, but that they think they have found a way to make meth or some drug out of some product in this.
See, I just figured that underarm stench had reached critical mass in Georgia, and people were just trying to combat it in any way they possibly could.
And Johnny Lee's not much for showering, so he asked us to pick him up a little something for under the arms.
I can't afford as much deodorant as we need, so yes. I'm just going to steal it from the store.
You can't get that on your wick.
There's 12 things of deodorant.
There's your Hick Watch.
Copenhagen makes me feel so good. Copenhagen, the way I know it should. Well, I put a little chew in my mouth, go spitting, slobbering on around the house. That Copenhagen makes me feel so good.
By the way, the The listener who uses Skin Trade as his name, he wants to clarify. He wants to know that that comes from his career as a tattoo artist. So there you go. We're not saying that he's not dealing in white slavery or anything. You know, like to the best of our knowledge. Here is Don Taylor.
Critics of the tougher screening procedures at airports are laughing at what?
Okay. I don't know. Laughing at
well,
what?
You wrote the. I'm just going to read this the way it's okay. written here. This All thing right. that you printed out okay. and gave to me. Critics of tougher security screening procedures at airports are laughing National Opt-Out Day Wednesday in protest.
Right.
Many passengers have described what they call invasive pat-downs. Thomas Sawyer, a bladder cancer survivor, said a pat-down wound up with him covered in urine.
This is, was this TSA 1?
This is Sawyer.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. He says TSA Administrator John Pistol called him to apologize. The pair also shared some humor.
I said, I don't imagine you've been too busy today. And he said, oh, no, just a couple meetings here and there. And I said, yeah, I had a couple phone calls, too, and we laughed.
And also, I'm covered in whiz.
Sawyer says screeners didn't listen when he tried to explain that he had a urostomy bag attached to his stomach. He describes what happened next.
They did the pat-down of my chest. They caught the palm of their hand on my urostomy bag and opened it. And I had urine going down me. That's the short version.
Nice.
I don't think I want to hear the long version. I mean, what would the long version possibly contain that I don't already know?
More graphic descriptions of the urine pouring all over his body.
I guess. I mean, I think I can probably suss that out myself. That seems like a little bit of a, it seems like an A, not even A to Z, that's like just an A to C proposition there. All right. So I'm going to skip over the fact that his name is Tom Sawyer because it is, I have really no reference there. This, you know, blah, 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 whitewash, blah, blah, blah. Is this the same guy, though, or is this a second case of a
no,
guy with a urine bag?
I think it's the same guy.
Because you're going to figure that there's, you know, there's a lot of folks who have, you know, they have some sort of an ailment or they have some condition or whatever, and they got to have a bag to gather whatever. It's like a stone gathering moss, but not so much with a stone of the moss. And then they go through and, the TSA guys have. But see, here's the thing. This is like I was saying the other day. This guy sort of beat me to the punch inadvertently because I was saying that I was just going to warn them that I had a really, really explosive bladder condition. And that if they touched my junk in the wrong way, it was just like everywhere, you know, and it was just like everybody was going to get they were going to be showered in unpleasantness.
You get it like actually if you have a colostomy bag, you could actually poke it with some holes
and just perforate it.
Just perforate it a little bit so that when they do grab it, then it does all over their hands.
You know, when you think about it, you don't really spend a lot of time thinking about people in general under their clothes or what might be lurking under there until you like wake up one day and your job is a TSA guy and you just got to sit there and glove up and just be like, you know, and it's not like you can just sort
what's
of,
this?
It's not, yeah, it's not like you can just pick and choose. It's not like, you know, it's not like you can just choose, you know, like you can just choose Jessica Alba for that. It's kind of, you know, it's kind of everybody. You got to do the Ethel Mermans of the world too. And that's no fun. No fun at all. All right. Here is Don Taylor.
Well, the Australian Classification Board is now banning depictions of small-breasted women in adult publications and films. They banned mainstream pornography from showing women with A-cup breasts, apparently on the grounds that they encourage pedophilia. And in spite of this fact, this is a normal breast size for many adult women. Presumably, small-breasted women taking photographs of themselves will now be guilty of creating simulated child pornography.
Now, are they talking about making it illegal? Or have they actually made it illegal?
No, it says they are now banning it. They have started to ban depictions of small-breasted women in adult publications.
Have they defined what small-breasted actually means?
A-cup breasts.
Now, that's
smaller.
Weird because if you were – because it seems like that is – because that – is that not relative to the size of the woman?
Yes.
If you're a large-framed woman, which is not just a thing – it's not just a dodge you use when you have to go into the Husky Girl section of Sears. Like, there are large – not large-boned, but, you know, but this is a largish – women of larger carriage who, you know, where it's all about how it – this is another reason, by the way, another indication that guys don't know what the hell they're talking about because guys get so hung up on measurements and cup size and whatever. But, you know, but it doesn't matter. You know, if you're like some six-foot-tall chick who weighs, you know – 190 pounds or something. It's different than if you're, you know, I don't know if you're like some, you know, some pixie bird-like chick. Then it probably, you know, it doesn't, you know, it's not the same thing. So they're banning women who are more slender up top, as well as what?
Also they've banned pornographic depictions of female ejaculation.
Okay.
The censors have branded that as abhorrent.
I believe, by the way, that's the first time that phrase has ever been used on this program. I mean, like, ever. In the entirety of this show's history. I don't think we've ever – I think we've vaulted over a brand new hurdle here.
Hmm.
Okay. So It seems like I ought to have more to say about this, but I don't really know. I mean, it's just, it seems like it's one of those things that can't possibly be true. Like it's one of those stories that has somehow been overstated or that the government has released as a sort of test balloon. Like they put the story out just to see how much derision and mockery they will receive. And then based upon that, they'll decide whether or not they're actually going to plunge forward with it.
Well, apparently it's in response to a campaign led by something called Kids Free to Be Kids. And who say that
is this because like if it's a flat-chested chick that it's that repeated exposure to it will somehow turn you into a pedophile?
Apparently so, yes. Or it's like
or that pedophiles are going to use it as like pseudo kiddie porn.
Maybe. Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't make any sense either way, but I would see this is one of those stories where I would really like to just get the guy in a room and sit him down and just say, "Look, whether or not I agree with it, just walk me through the process. Please to explain exactly how it is you got from point A to point B in this story. Because if they were, like you could, it doesn't make any sense really, but you could almost see, maybe, you could almost see their train of thought, their logic, if the thinking is that some pedophiles are going to get this and they're going to use it or repackage or reframe this porn in a way to make it appear as though it's kiddie porn. Because you hear that thing with Photoshop sometimes, yeah. Where they'll take like, you know, where they'll take like the kid's face from a Sears catalog or something and they'll stick it on like a nude body and it'll be like, well, is that kiddie porn or isn't it? You can almost see if they were like, if there was a problem with people taking this and somehow re-editing it to make it look like kiddie porn. But it doesn't sound like that's happening. The other thing makes no sense at all.
Yeah, there were a couple of senators in the Australian government about a year ago. And they started a campaign against publicly available porn, and they got magazines from, corner shops, things that are just on the stands, and claimed that publications featuring small-breasted women encouraged pedophilia.
So it encouraged pedophilia.
Yeah.
Because you would say, well, wait a minute, so I'm really into chicks, and so chicks like this, therefore I must, or, you know, chicks who look like this, and this, so therefore I must then move on to... All right.
And it doesn't really matter if they're adults or not. They've just decided that, you know, if they have small breasts. So apparently this is the part of the result of this is that you're seeing larger and larger boobs in dirty magazines and porn in Australia.
I was actually going to say, so really one of the unexpected benefits of this is that it's just going to be big racks on women everywhere throughout the land down under.
And then apparently there's been a big boom in adult films featuring female ejaculation. Okay. I don't know why.
I'm sorry, Cheryl. This is Dawn continuing this.
It's kind of interesting. The films are being banned on one of two grounds. One, that the depictions are a form of urination, which is banned under the label of golden showers in the classification guidelines.
Jesus.
Or two, female ejaculation. They are saying it is an abhorrent depiction.
By the way, never mind. You know, I'm just getting so many comments about coming in about this, but they're all unsuitable to be just in, on grounds of just general decorum. They are all inappropriate. All right. Have you ever read that David Duchovny interview he did with Playboy?
No.
Oh, man. You ever want to read, you know, because the Playboy interview I consider to be the definitive interview. There is no magazine that does a better interview than Playboy to this day. I mean, it doesn't matter what it is. He did this interview with Playboy magazine in, I think, maybe, when did the X-Files kind of wrap up its run?
96.
97. So it would have been right about that because he came back for the final spate of episodes, right? Wasn't that the thing?
Yeah.
Because he was gone and it was, what's his name? It was the T-1000 guy.
Yeah, Robert Patrick.
Yeah, and then David Duchovny came back to finish it out. And right around the time they were wrapping up the X-Files, Duchovny did this interview with Playboy magazine where he talked at length. I mean, unsurprisingly, given what we now know about in his personal predilections, he just went on and on just in great, like, glowing, flowery detail about his thoughts and ruminations on pornography. Not that he's alone in doing that, I should point out.
No, but he does have a special love for the porn.
Yes, it does. And but he talked about how the X-Files was filming in Canada for a long time, and how in Canada, if you go to the hotel room, it's not like the cable porn. It's not like the softcore. They get like the full on hardcore porn. And he said that the biggest problem, he said it was a bit of a trade-off though, that you'd be sitting there watching hardcore porn in your Canadian hotel room. And that was the good part. The bad part was that the Canadian technology lagged behind American technology in that your in-room porn in Canada, you didn't really have like control over it. In other words, it didn't have like a fast forward, stop, rewind. Like you would start the movie and the movie just went. It was like, you know, it was like you were on the Autopia ride with boobs. Like there was no getting off. You just, so to speak, you just the movie started and you couldn't stop it. And so he expressed this fear that because he was watching so much porn in his hotel room in Canada, and because the porn movie couldn't be stopped, paused, or rewound, that he was, how do I put this? He said that he seemed to have developed this streak of he had this bad luck streak going where his pleasure apogee, his moment of fulfillment would come at the same moment that the screen was filled with like just a shot of a guy's ass or something. And he said that he feared that in a Pavlovian way he was training himself to be gay. That he would then only be able to reach satisfaction by viewing just like some hairy buttocks on the screen. So, you know, maybe the Australian government, they are following the sort of Duchovny, you know, what came to be known as the Duchovny syndrome. They're afraid that will be plaguing the men and women of their fine country.
Okay.
All right, there you go. Probably not true, though.
Probably not.
All right, fantastic. Let's do one more, and then we'll talk Walking Dead and Dexter.
Okay, I was trying to find something that we could segue into a spot from our new sponsor. Story I have is horrible.
That's why I actually just said we'll do one more, because I realized there was no way I could go into anything following that discussion.
Every story I have is awful. Okay, well then let's just pick anything from a...
It doesn't really matter, because I'm going to separate it with something else. So you just plunge on ahead.
Awful. All right. For years, 6-year-old Alexis McCarter has been plagued by headaches, nosebleeds, and ear infections. Her parents took her to doctor after doctor, but there wasn't a medical explanation for the problems until recently. A CT scan has revealed the problem is a safety pin lodged in the girl's sinus cavity. Doctors at Medical University of South Carolina told McCarter as a baby, Alexis must have somehow stuck a safety pin up her nose, and over time it made its way to the sinus cavity where it lodged after it opened. I couldn't say anything. It just broke my heart, said McCarter. Alexis doesn't seem to let the pain slow her down, but her mother says every night she asks for an ice pack. If I could take the safety pin so she wouldn't have to go through it, I would, said McCarter.
So the safety pin, and this is the kind that folds in and hooks underneath the deal, right?
Yeah.
It's like a loop, basically. So it's not like a push pin or what is the thing I'm thinking of? Like a stainless steel, just a regular pin.
Nope, safety pin.
Okay, so how did it get up into the sinus cavity?
As like a toddler,
she just jammed
it
up her nose
because babies, small children,
stick things in their
nose, and it worked its way to her sinuses, and then at some point it opened once it was already there, and they didn't know it.
Please tell me there's an X-ray.
Oh, there is indeed.
Really? Are you uploading that?
I'm going to get that and
awesome.
And then send that.
That'll be at rickemerson.com/pictures visual aids for November 23rd. So we'll get that up here in just a bit.
She is scheduled for surgery in Charleston on December 7th to have it removed.
I would think so.
The doctors will have to go through the roof of her mouth to remove it.
God damn. All right.
It will be done as an outpatient procedure, though. They said it could take maybe 30 minutes. McCarter said, my biggest concern is a brain drip. Doctors said that was a possibility.
What is a brain drip, please?
I have no idea.
That isn't where your brain just drips out of your sinuses, like out of your nose or something.
I don't know, but it sounds horrible.
Bob, you've got a little bit of brain coming out of your nose. You want to tuck that back inside. It's if your sinus cavity... So is your sinus cavity separate from your brain?
Yes.
Like, but I mean, is there like a wall or like part of your skull or something separating the two?
I believe so. Yes.
Okay, so it wouldn't be. So this
otherwise, snot would get into your brain.
No, that's true. You don't want that.
No.
No, that seems like that would lead to all kinds of unpleasantness. So if it's in your sinus cavity, and they're taking it out of the sinus cavity by going through the roof of her mouth, but they're afraid about brain drip happening.
Yeah.
Then brain drip would be.
I don't know.
How did it open when it's inside her sinus
mom.
Cavity?
This is the girl's mom. Maybe she's just making something.
Oh, so maybe that's okay.
I'm
so
worried
about
brain drip.
So that's not like a scientific term the doctors used. No. So it's just like a thing the mom said. So maybe the mom's grasp of anatomy is rather tenuous.
I'm worried about brain shadow, brain fog.
Maybe
what was the thing in narrow.
Maybe so. Maybe that's the thing where the mom's understanding of science and how it operates is not as advanced as it might ideally be.
It is South Carolina.
Maybe the mom has a little bit of brain drip going on. You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. There's no. Oh, I'm sorry. That's totally the wrong button to press.
That wouldn't be it at all.
A little brain drip happening here, right there. There's no segue from from anything into anything, I think, following those two stories. Yeah. I mean, that story didn't really make it any easier. It just made it harder in a different way.
Honestly, I did shuffle through the pile and realized everything I have left for today is just awful.
The Rick Emerson Show, it's a big pile of awful. Well, this big pile of horrible is brought to you by, among other folks, Squires Electric. You can find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com. See, and it seems like there is some sort of a comparison I can make here, because just like with the safety pin, I mean, you know what it is? That's like the right tool for the job, and then the guy who knows how to do it. You know, that's the thing where it's like it's a man who knows how to perform a tricky procedure, but a procedure that needs to be done regardless. Wouldn't you say that's the case, Don Taylor?
I think that would be exactly the case.
So if you got some sort of difficulty going on in your home, whether it's electric or whether it's through with your Ethernet wiring, maybe it's not even a problem. Maybe, as they say in sales, it's an opportunity. Maybe you're just expanding. Maybe you're putting in a different room in your house, or you're remodeling, or maybe you bought somebody's house. You know, but, you know, you buy the house, and the house is, you know, from 150 years ago, or whoever lived there before was just some weird sort of, just some sort of Kaczynski freak, and he just never turned on the lights and didn't have any use for it, and it's like an interrogation room in 24 where there's just one bare bulb swinging somewhere, and, you know, like in the fruit cellar, but the rest of the house is dim. That's probably not the case, to be fair.
Or you do something like, I bought my house, it was 100 years old, and there were a lot of things going on, but especially in the basement, where, for example, one of the lights in the basement was merely turned on with bare wires jammed into an outlet.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Hey, you know, I found myself doing a you thing this morning. So you've talked about the business of how you'll just stick a fork into the toaster while the toaster is still plugged in.
Yeah. Not all the time.
You know, but
not
enough.
Not daily.
Enough that it's eventually going to provide some entertainment for us, I would imagine. And perhaps a job opening. I have this lamp in my home office, and it's that thing where there's there's the lamp itself, the ceramic part, and then there's the neck of the lamp, and then there's the socket into which the bulb goes, and there's the socket, and on the side of the socket, that's where the switch is, you know, that you turn. And it's not a switch that you push through. I don't know what that's called, but it's a switch that you turn. The socket and the switch and the light bulb, that part of it has now come loose to where it's not actually mounted down, and the whole thing sort of flops around like when you dislocate your shoulder or something inside. And every time I go to turn the light on or off and I twist it, and the whole thing sort of goes and just sort of wheels around in my hand. I just know that one of these days I'm going to do that, and it's going to be that thing from the cartoons where Lara's going to look in and she can just see my bones as I'm lit up from the inside, and then my head will explode. So, I mean, that's a thing I should get fixed, or, you know, I could just get rid of that lamp, I suppose.
Possibly.
But you want to contact Squires Electric for any and all eventualities that may resemble these, or anything else that has to do with wires in your home, your home office, if it's got, upgrade written all over it because, you know, you moved in and it's just not satisfying your current internet needs, they can get that taken care of. And if they, you know, if you're going to be building something from scratch, frankly, if you're going to be building a structure for your business, or you're going to be remodeling a building for your business, you know, we've told this story before, but the guy that they've done that they're doing this condominium for actually started by having them do a single socket in his house. He's like, hey, I can't get this light to work. What's up with the socket? They come, they fix the socket. A couple years later, bam, doing the entire building. So Squires Electric really is good folks to have in your speed dial. Good number to write down. 503-252-1609. That is 503-252-1609. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. That is SquiresElectric.com, 503-252-1609. Back after this, the Rick Emerson Show continues next.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Some days I feel like my shadow's casting me. Some days the sun don't shine. Sometimes I wonder what tomorrow's gonna bring when I think about my dirty life and times. One day I came to a fork in the road. Folks, I just couldn't go. Thank you. night someone tells you went out for a stroll. Should run after her. It's hard to find a girl with a heart of gold when you're living in a four-letter world. But if she won't love me, then her sister will. She's from Say One Thing and Need Another's Hill. And she can't seem to make up her mind. She hears about my dirty life and times. Woo! Some days I feel like my shadow's casting. Some days the sun don't shine. Sometimes I wonder why I'm still running free. All up and down the line. Gets a little lonely, folks, you know what I mean. I'm looking for a woman with low self-esteem. Down my dirty life and times. Ooh, lay me out and ease my worried mind while I'm winding down my dirty life and times.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. Thank you for joining us. Join us tomorrow when our guests will include, I believe, Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week.
Will he actually be here, or is this a phone thing?
You know, I don't know, but I feel like now, if I guess, I can just make the other thing happen. Hmm. I can just make the contrary event take place.
So you're really hoping that it'll be Kelly Clark, because, you know, she's dreamy.
I guess. I don't even know. It's 503-505-6964. In just a moment, we'll do our recap of Sunday's Walking Dead. So that means, so it is the, I guess Sunday was the anti-penultimate episode, because then there's one more, and then there's the finale.
Okay.
So we got two left. I'll also talk a little bit about Dexter. We've got your Taser Watch coming up as well. Plus, by the way, I just have to note, I think it was actually during the last break you mentioned this. So you downloaded that Rage game for your iPhone. Yeah. How great is that? And you didn't even get the HD version.
No. I just got the regular version. And oh my God, the graphics on that are just beautiful.
Freaking stunning, isn't it? And it's like, and I got the HD. Not that I really meant. I mean, it's, you know, I got the. I mean, whatever. You know, there's that whole thing with the iPhone for the Retina display. It's more pixels than the human eye can even. But
what
it's like the, it's. But it's only on a screen, like, you know. It's
what
like.
What does that mean, by the way? Retina display.
Well, that's just what they call it. It's the name of. It's their.
Because your retina.
It's a trademark. It's a.
Okay.
It's just a marketing term.
Oh, all right. Because it's been. It just seems like a gross misuse of that word.
No, it's just. It's just we're running out of names for things, and so they just got to go. What's this? It's a Fliberty.
Oh, okay.
What does that mean? Nothing. It's. I'm almost certain that that's just Apple's. But what does Snow Leopard mean? I mean, it's nothing. Snow Leopard's a dumb name for an operating system, but you know, it doesn't really stop them. To their credit, Apple's typically pretty good about naming things. But I believe, the Retina display is the whole claim that it actually has more pixels than the human eye can even register, which would seem pointless. But what do I know?
Yeah.
So I'm like, hey, screw it. I'll just get the HD thing, which doesn't really matter because it's not a screen the size of a business card anyway.
See, and I don't have the Retina display on my 3GS, so it doesn't really matter.
I can't even imagine how great that thing would look on the iPad, though, because I know that it runs on the iPad as well. So if you guys and now, see, I may be talking about something that is only available for, like, for the Apple platform. I don't know if there's an Android version or not. There may in fact be an Android version of this game, but here's the amazing thing about this. So we're talking about this game called Rage, which is a first-person shooting game from id Software, who created Doom and Quake and whatever. And it's by John Carmack, who was, you know, really just the brain trust of that company. I mean, the visionary behind the entire thing. And, you know, he's just one of the most influential forces in gaming and in computer technology over the last 25 years. But the amazing thing about it is, as beautiful and as fantastic as those graphics are, I mean, in the HD version, I haven't seen the regular one, but the HD version, I imagine there can't be that much difference, but it's just stunning. It's not even like the full game, because that's just a teaser. I mean, that's basically the game you have for the iPhone that you downloaded for like 99 cents. As great as that is a trailer, effectively, for the full game, which I guess is coming out for the different platforms next year.
And that's brilliant marketing, because not only is it it's a fun game to play. I mean, the gameplay is really fun, but yeah, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It is just beautiful to look at.
For you kids out there,
there it is, just in the non-HD. It's still gorgeous.
It's just stunning. For you, for my peeps out there that are children of the 80s, if you played a game called Smash TV, imagine if you were to take Smash TV and if you were to – it is almost exactly a hybrid between Smash TV and, let's say, Doom 3 or Quake or something.
It is a little Left 4 Dead kind of thrown in there as well, because,
it's a first-person shooter where you're going through the game and you're and then there's horrible things that jump out of the shadows that want to eviscerate you, and you got to shoot them with an increasingly loud and blood-splattering series of weapons. But then, like Smash TV, it is put in the context of being a really horrific, made-for-television game show. Where you're like grabbing a bag of money and shooting a bullseye, and then there's like a really obnoxious game show host. So, and Smash TV, by the way, to this day is hands down my favorite video game of all time. So it was about time that somebody revisited that.
And I like a good first person shooter. I just have always found that most of them,
they don't make you vomit. You're not one of those people, are you?
No.
Okay.
No, they don't. But I've always found most of them are just overly complicated.
Right.
Which is one reason I really like Left 4 Dead.
Nothing about id is overly complicated.
You're just walking around shooting things like House of the Dead.
Yeah.
I would go to, if there was a place that had the arcade version of House of the Dead, I would spend like $10 in quarters just playing that thing for as long as I could, because, you know, you're just walking around shooting stuff.
That's
really what you want.
No, I mean, this is what the people who made Left 4 Dead really understand, is that, you know, it's not like you have to go get a key to get out of a thing, to find a glowing disc, to solve a puzzle, to just
then
give me a bigger gun.
Sit through a cut screen while the guy comes and tells you the history of the ancient ruins that you've just walked into. Come on, I just want to shoot stuff in the head.
Let me just talk about, if we can just be nerds for just one moment here, let me just talk about something. I'll just have a nerd deviation bet here. Let me talk about a first-person shooter that really came like this close to being an instant classic, and it was undone by the cutscene. It's a game called Black, and many of you may have played Black when it came out, and they may have already put out a sequel by now, but maybe not. Black was a game that was originally titled Gun Porn. And I think somebody finally decided that was going to get them in a little bit of trouble. And so Black is a first-person shooter. It doesn't take place, I mean, it takes place in the real world. In other words, it's not zombies, it's not outer space. But I don't believe, but it's also not like Modern Warfare 2 or something where it takes place like in Fallujah or some real locale. Because as much, see, and this makes me, I think, I don't know whether I'm becoming old and soft, whether I'm just becoming a pussy in my old age or something, but as a side note to a side note, I could tell you, I have somebody asked me if I was playing Black Ops, and I said that I wasn't, because last Christmas, Lara, because she's the best wife ever, she brought him for Christmas. She rented the Modern Warfare 2, because I think it had actually just come out right around that time. And I got to tell you that I actually had to stop playing it. It made me feel really conflicted. I don't know if you've played Modern Warfare 2 or any of the, you know, like the recent Call of Duty stuff.
I don't play the war games.
I'm
not comfortable with them.
It made me feel so it's not just me then. It made me feel really it made me feel kind of guilty. I felt, and maybe that now, and I got to say, now my wife, she works with a lot of guys who just came back from over there, as they say. So that might contribute to it. Although, to be fair, she didn't have any problem with it. She said that it didn't bother her at all. Now, that might, again, be because she's sort of inured to it because she sees it all the time. But she said she didn't have any problem with it. It made me feel really weird because it wasn't like, It wasn't like you were fighting, like, Nazis or something, who we can all agree you can just kill by the bushelful and it doesn't bother you at all. Nazis, bring them on. Nazis and zombies. Nazis and zombies are basically the same. They're the perfect target because they look human, but they're really not. They're Nazis or zombies. You can shoot them in the head all day. I can shoot Nazis by the thousand. Yeah. Nazi zombies.
Like Wolfenstein, that whole scene where, like, the Nazi dogs are coming at you. I love dogs. Don't want to shoot dogs. But Nazi Dobermans, I'm fine with shooting
them.
They're
evil dogs, Don. They're Nazis.
Right.
And so I got no issue with that. Like I said, you bring me some undead Nazis, that's the best enemy of all. I don't care. But I was playing Modern Warfare 2, and I think you're actually in, I might be wrong, but you're in, like, I think the guy actually says Fallujah at some point, or Afghanistan, but it's like a real place. And you're going through this, you know, basically this small town doing a sweep and clear, which is basically you just shoot everything. And as you get shot, you know, it's like there's the weird blood spatter on the screen, and there's like the, and it just, the whole thing made me feel really uneasy. I felt really strange about it. So I had to kind of opt out of that.
The closest I've ever come to playing any kind of a, because I've never really analyzed why I don't like them, but I just really don't like the realistic warfare things. The closest I ever came was playing Fallout. And again, that's like a post-apocalyptic place where you're you know.
And I think it's not
a third-person thing, too. So
and it's not a thing that you're seeing on the news or that, like, you know people who are being sent there for real, you know, where it's less fun. So anyway, I don't want to sound like a killjoy, but I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, I honestly don't pass judgment on people who do that. I don't care. It really is just a me thing. It made me feel kind of weird, and so I opted out. But whatever. But Black is a game that is sort of like that, where it's like in an indistinct, country with, you know, people are shouting some sort of foreign gibberish, but it's not, I don't think it's like any place in particular. So you can kind of be like, well, it's not a real place. It just sort of looks like a real place. But it's an amazing game, Black. Black is just, because all it is like a flat-out run and gun. I mean, it's like you're just picking up larger and larger guns and better and bigger ammunition and just, you know, and there'll be sequences where you're like, have to fight your way through a cemetery and you're ducking down behind tombstones and you're just like unloading on a guy with some belt-fed machine gun and it's just freaking awesome. It's just like these, just endless series of just like increasingly hectic and exhilarating gun battles. And then they F themselves by having, wait for it, long, unskippable cutscenes. Make the cutscenes optional, for the love of Christ.
Just hit the thing and go past it.
And I thought it was a mistake. Like, I thought my controller was broken the first time. Like, I was like, maybe it's the X button. Maybe it's the trigger. Maybe it's the start. And then I went online, and sure enough, that's the biggest complaint about the game. And so as a result, I eventually quit playing it before I even finished it. Because the checkpoints are few and far between, so I would get killed a lot, and then I'd have to go back and I'd have to go 5 minutes of... I basically just go into the kitchen and make a sandwich while the guy's going, it's called Operation Jenkins, you know, or whatever, and you just think, okay, I gotta go take a whiz, I'll be back. You know, and you come back, and the guy's still going, Sarge, but that must mean he's still behind enemy lines. That's right, Ted, you've gotta go in and get him. Here's your gun, you know, and just waiting for the goddamn cutscene to be over.
Yeah, there's a game that I was playing on... PlayStation, I think it was called Okami, which is really lovely, and it's one, you know, it's got all this mythology and it's Japanese and it all looks like it's kind of Japanese art on scrolls and things like that, but you're running around in it and you're this wolf and you're doing things and you actually solve puzzles and you defeat enemies by basically painting on the screen with an ink brush and circling things and slashing through them. And it's really artistically really gorgeous, and the gameplay is really nice. But the thing is, it's like the beginning of the game, you have to sit through like 45 minutes of backstory where they're explaining to you where the wolf comes from and what happened to the town and where all the people went. And it's like, even if you keep like, they start talking, they get halfway through a speech, and then you hit skip. But even though you're doing that, you're sitting there for like 40 minutes. Because I had, at one point, I can't remember why, but the game got erased, and I had to start over from the beginning again. And I ended up just not ever playing it again, because I couldn't stand to sit through that whole beginning
all
over again.
And it just gets longer every time, it seems like. You watch it, and it just becomes more and more tedious. And it's because the game players, or the gameplay has been made by a company that shelled out like a massive amount of money to create the cutscene and to hire the voice actors. And so it's like, God damn it, we're going to make people watch it. We paid out the ass for this. People are going to see it. So, no, thank you. Do not want. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. We'll do Walking Dead, Dexter here in just a moment. And then Don Taylor's tracking the following headlines to which we will get here in just a short while.
Well, I only have time for a few, but I do have a story about 1,000 rats that are up for adoption in California. And porn star who is accusing Charlie Sheen of giving her money to keep quiet about.
Excellent.
It.
Does her mouthpiece claim that he's being framed on all charges?
Probably.
Railroaded?
Sure.
All right. All right, well, let's talk about Walking Dead. So we're a day late on this. It's Tuesday. This is Sunday's Walking Dead, which was episode 4 of season 1. And I do not remember the name of the episode, but it was the 4th of 6. And I, as I said earlier, just found out yesterday that there's only 6 episodes, which... The weird thing about that writer's strike, because the writer's strike is the reason that Breaking Bad's first season was 6 episodes, and then they went to a full 13, full for AMC, 13 episodes, I think, for the subsequent seasons. That, I think, now worked out so well for them with Breaking Bad, that's probably how they're going to do it from now on, because they don't have to fork out for the entire series before they know, you know, if it's actually going to make its money back.
And the same thing happened with Lost and with Battlestar Galactica.
Right.
And but the thing is, those shows were huge. Those shows had huge, rabid followings, and so they were able to survive, you know, a huge, long hiatus before they came back again.
Which this, you know, might, who knows? I mean, it's got massive ratings. It's the highest rated show on the network already. And that wasn't just for the debut. I mean, I think every episode of Walking Dead has been like the highest rated episode they've ever had for a second or third or fourth episode.
They certainly are gambling, though, that the zombie thing will stay in vogue for a while.
Maybe they're, and it's like the Darabont thing, too. I think maybe he must have had enough. Because they confirmed that they gave him the second season, I think, after, the first episode or something. So, I mean, he must have come to them with the entire first and second season already done, or at least the first season. And they must have... you wonder when he was told it was going to be only 6 episodes. Like, had they already confirmed the series? Well, they must have, because you got to figure that the way things work in Hollywood. They must have signed the contract after all of that was already explained to him, and he just figured, like... You know, look, if the show's a big hit, they'll bring it back.
Well, given the way they're pacing this first season, they've got like 6 years of it written already.
Right, right. So, well, they've got the book to go to anyway for inspiration.
That's what I meant. You've got 6 years of plot already laid out for you.
Yeah, I think it's coming out now. I don't know if this is true or not, but I read somewhere the other day that they're saying that the alleged, they still haven't confirmed the existence of it yet. At the same time, they were talking about the release date of the sequel to Zombieland, which is Zombie World, which is where I think they end up in Florida at like a sort of Epcot Center kind of a place. And so the story was that even though no one is publicly even confirming the movie exists, they're saying that it's going to come out in June. So, you know, if you figure they got, you know, if they're going to do the Halloween thing again, I mean, that gives them a little bit of lead time. But I thought Sunday's episode was not as good as episode 3. There were parts of it I could have done without. You said that and I've never read the graphic novel for Walking Dead, but you said that the dialogue is really bad and stilted and whatever, and all, you know, which is, you know, and I'm glad they've evened it out a bit for television. Even though they did a little bit of a twist on it at the end, I got to tell you, the whole thing of, like, so they run into, like, the first overtly Hispanic characters, and of course then they're like vatos, you know, they're like gangbanging guys.
And I will tell you, I don't know if you noticed the credits, Kirkman actually wrote this episode. The guy who wrote the graphic novels.
Oh, see, and I don't know who that
yeah,
is.
Yeah, no, he actually wrote this episode.
That would explain perhaps why it's so ham-handed.
Yeah, a little
because
bit.
I'm like, hey, you know, look, it's a guy who's not white. Oh, he's a gang member, you know, and it's like, it's just, you know, and it's not like I'm offended by it, but you just figure, like, come on, really? Like, is that really where we are already? We're just showing these guys who are, like, basically, I mean, they did everything but just have the guys, like, in front of a lowrider, you know, just sort of, like, leaning back with, like, you know, like a beanie pulled down. And I was, you know, the episode. We'll get to more of it later on, but I found that part really it just took me out of the show more than anything because it seemed so trite. Yeah. Even though then they did the whole thing of like redeeming them because they've got a heart of gold because it's really a nursing home that they're protecting or whatever.
And in case anyone who's listening hasn't seen this episode yet, I'm not going to spoil this for you. But there are a couple of characters that die, and I was actually tempted to go like drag the book back out. And read it because I think at least one character bites it, not so to speak, in a way that is very much unlike what happens in the original story.
Well, And so. I will, just because we're going to talk about the, and I will actually say, if you haven't seen Sunday's Walking Dead, and if you, you know, want to stay spoiler free, you might just want to skip ahead a couple minutes then, because here's what I will say about Sunday's episode. Here's what I liked. I liked, in a weird way, I liked the beginning where they were just sitting on the fishing boat talking about, you know, dad teaching you to fish or whatever.
Yeah.
I didn't see it as what in retrospect it obviously was, which is a big setup for the kill of that character, which I've been watching television like for 40 years. I should have recognized, like, well, they're spending a lot of time with this character. We haven't. Oh, she's going to die, you know, which is. So I always admire a show that can get me like that.
Yeah, it felt very much like they were enriching this character's relationship,
right?
Because they're going to continue for the long haul.
That's it, which is, you know, you got to admire the fact that they were able to pull it off, that they were able to set up a character to be killed later on without telegraphing it in advance. You know, and am I the only one that every time a character is in the water, I keep waiting for a zombie to be in the freaking water? Is it, I mean, does Walking Dead take place in a world where there are no zombies in the water?
I don't think there are zombies in the water.
Okay, because every time, I guess I'm thinking of Max Brooks style zombies then,
right?
Because I just keep waiting for, like, you know, for the ghoul to be under, like, pulling them down onto the floor of the river or whatever. I will say this about Sunday's episode, though. I liked the opening. The middle stuff where the guys are trudging through the city, it's like, I could have done without all of that. The thing of the guy digging the graves or the holes at the time, I spotted right off what that was all about. I was like, well, that's foreshadowing because somebody, they're all going to be dead by the end of the episode, or a bunch of people are going to be dead.
Yeah.
So that didn't really pay off as a twist the way that Darabont probably wanted it to. And I keep saying Darabont, although I don't even know if he's directing all the episodes at this point. I didn't know if he directed this episode or not. But he's, you know, the showrunner.
I didn't catch that.
Here's what was really great, though. I did not see the ending coming where the zombies just storm the camp. They really got me with that one. Because even when the guy, like, goes, well, hold on a second, or whatever, and he unzips the tent and there's the zombie, I didn't see that coming. And I certainly didn't see, like, 50 of them just streaming into the camp. That really caught me off guard. It was brutal. Lara watched it. I watched it a second time with her last night. And she was actually, like, recoiling from the television a little bit. That was brutal. That was, like, up close and terrifying.
Although, if you're anything like me, though, you ended up just really angry at them for being such dumbasses. It's like, really, you're so vigilant about keeping watch during the day. But at night, it's like, right. Screw security. Let's all just sit around the campfire and tell stories. We don't have to keep an eye out for zombies at night.
There was also a little bit of inconsistency there. There's a continuity thing, because in the first or second episode, they actually showed at one point that the camp, at least partially, was ringed by, like, a bunch of, like, coffee cans on fishing line that you would stumble over that would make noise. And so I'm like, well, where was that? And did they only, like, go, well, let's just ring that, like, couple of feet over there. Let's not do the rest of it. It was strange that they didn't, that for some reason, there are no noise-making devices placed anywhere. Like, there's nothing else placed as you approach the camp, apparently, to alert you that, like, hey, a zombie is coming this way.
Yeah. No, it's, no, they were just badly protecting themselves.
And what,
like, not protecting themselves at all.
They really, they left themselves kind of wide open for that. But it was kind of a satisfying way to get the sort of, you know, because I don't know if they're ever going to be able to go a full episode where they don't have, like, a zombie attack. I mean, I guess you could say, well, like, the human element and the breakdown of society is interesting, but, you know, they also know what pays the bills. I mean, people are turning in to see zombie stuff. So what is the deal with her sister, though? So her sister gets killed, the zombie, like, takes out her throat or whatever. And again, this is like,
weren't you waiting for her to just, like, die and then turn into a zombie?
See, that's my thing, and it's, I don't even know if it counts as a spoiler if I ask this, because it's like, I don't know what, because walking, you know, the zombie thing is so weird, because there's certain commonalities between different worlds. There's, like, Romero zombie and Max Brooks zombie, and, you know, there's, like, the Zombieland, and there's this. So I don't know if it's a deal where, like, does she have to, like, additionally shoot her sister in the head now to keep her from coming back? I mean, how does that work in that world?
I don't know. I don't remember, because I know that, I mean, obviously you have to shoot them, the zombies, you have to take off the head in this world to actually kill them. So,
but, or you got to shoot them in the brain, at least.
Yeah, so I don't remember. I don't.
Because her sister's been infected, you know, because the zombie, like, bit her or something.
Yeah, and I honestly, I can't. And I was watching this and going, I don't remember. There were two different characters in this episode where I was going, I don't remember this being how they died.
There were characters actually killed at the end that I swore to God that I'd never even seen them before, that they were just red shirts brought on. They were like the Ensign Louie, you know.
Well, there are a lot more people in this camp than I thought there were.
Go to the tentacle planet, you know, whatever. So in any event, but I was, you know, I still.
Actually, this was directed by Johan Renck, who was a guy who's directed many episodes of Breaking Bad.
I am, you know, and that makes sense, actually, because AMC does often pull from their in-house, you know, the sort of people who've worked on their other series. So I'm, you know, I'm still a big fan of the show. I mean, I think it's, I won't say they're batting 1,000, but they're really coming close. So I will be curious to see, though, because we've only got two episodes left, if they're going to leave it on a cliffhanger, or if he'll try to, like, because he's got the second season, but I don't think he knew that when he filmed this season, unless it was like some deal where they said, we can't announce it, but we'll give you like at least 20 episodes or something. So I don't know how it'll end, if he'll wrap it up with a bow, or if it'll end with some big, like where they're penned in by the wall of zombies or something.
Know.
So, but your thoughts about Sunday?
It was all right. It wasn't. I thought it really didn't live up. The episode as a whole didn't live up to that opening, because that whole opening scene on the boat,
right,
between the sisters was really good. It was really well done. Unfortunately, we haven't gotten enough of those characters for us to really feel anything when we watch them get killed. We haven't had enough. You know, I got this real sense that they wanted us to be really upset,
right,
that the woman's sister is dead, that these people have been killed, but we haven't had enough time with them to actually care. So it really didn't affect me in any way. And the scene with, you know, her crying went on and on and on while you turn into a zombie or for something to happen.
Right.
And eventually it just, oh, okay, you're trying to tug on my heartstrings really, really badly. But again, I don't know these people well enough to care yet. This is like the fourth episode.
Right.
So, I, you know.
The other thing that they're not taking full advantage of, I say shifting into full, like, I could do it better mode. Let me tell you how to make a television series, Frank Darabont, hack. Is you got to figure, because it's the, you know, zombie apocalypse, whatever. So there's, you know, survivors scattered all over the place, as they've already demonstrated. You figure they could just be killing characters left and right with impunity. I mean, they could really be taking you by surprise. They could be doing the Whedon thing of just really setting you up to think that a character is going to be there for the long haul, and then killing them halfway through an episode.
Yeah.
And because it's not like you would be unable to replenish them. If the theory is that it's a camp full of ragtag band of misfits that have gathered together to fight off the whatever, really they could just get hosed at any time. And the best shows make you feel like that is a possibility. And I just don't feel like I'm getting that.
I will say two things that I really liked about this episode, though, as much as the whole team of Vatos was kind of, you know, hackneyed. I did like that their showdown turned into, you know, the grandma coming out,
right,
and like Edlin taking them back,
mijo,
and them discovering that it's a convalescent,
right,
home. I really liked that, and I also like that the redneck brother character is turning out to be not such a horrible guy.
Not a caricature.
He's not a caricature. He actually, you know, has some substance to him. So those two things, I think, really shook out well for me.
Somebody says, what got me is I was full on expecting Merle to be back at the camp waiting for them. Yeah.
That's who I thought was coming in the tent.
Yeah. I thought there was going to be some killing, some human-on-human violence at that point. Let's see. So real quickly, because, you know, no one cares, I'll talk about Dexter just a bit, because I'm so pot committed at this point that it's like I got to play this thread all the way out. Yeah, this season is just, you know, the summation of this season is missed opportunities. And now when I look back at Dexter as a whole, we are now on season 5. You could have made a really, really excellent 2-season show out of Dexter, which I know sounds like I'm just being a dick, and I don't mean to. I mean, it's just like there have been really great moments, and there are some things about Dexter, even now. That's why the thing is, every, like, they'll do it just often enough where it becomes a good show. Where you're like, oh, that's really great or creepy. But it's just like so few and far between now. I swear to God, the bulk of last night's episode was one of Rita's kids, the daughter Ariel, shows up, and she's having, and when I say teenage girl problems, I don't mean like those problems. Mm. I mean, it's like, you know, she's
female ejaculation.
Wow. No. No,
demonstrably. And small breasts?
No. Well, I don't know. She's 12. I didn't look.
Then, well, then yes,
I make
probably.
Eye contact with her. I don't look anywhere else. Mm. But, you know, but it's like she's, you know, she's starting her rebellious stage. Mm. And I swear to God, like 30 minutes of last night's or of Sunday's Dexter, was Dexter talking to Julia Stiles, also a lady who therefore knows about, you know, all girls and how they need to be treated, about how to deal with a teenage daughter. I mean, that really was, I mean, it just sounds like a joke, right? I mean, it just sounds like a parody of what we were saying Dexter had become, which is like, he's a serial killer who's also trying to juggle the demands of single fatherhood. Plus, there's a kooky guy next door that keeps showing up with heads or whatever. And I mean, that's really, it was just like, I don't know anything about it. And then and then, Christ, it just sounds like I'm making this up. It sounds like a Mad TV version of this. Then his dead father. And it's like they're skating on such thin ice using that device anyway, because it's such so clearly taken from 6 feet under.
And it's so used up. It was used up by the middle of the second season.
And I like that guy too. I forget his name, but the guy who plays the deck because he's from the Warriors. I dig that guy.
Yeah, he's awesome.
But it's like, I dig him actually way more than I dug the father on 6 feet under. You know, and I like that guy too, but he's a great actor, and that I do like the dad character, but you're right, it's like they've chewed the flavor out of that gum. This sounds like a freaking joke, but it's like at one point the dad is like talking with him and like giving him parenting advice for a teenage girl. They're talking about how to like, you know, how to help solve a teenage girl's problems. I'm like, really?
But
are you going to start lactating now? I mean, it was just...
So now is his father... Are we see? This is also the problem I got with I started having with the dead father thing, is because originally, obviously, this was like some projection of his own psyche,
right?
And then somewhere around season three, during the Trinity Killer thing, it's like Dad started knowing stuff that Dexter didn't know,
right?
And was like giving him advice.
He became the Great Gazoo, basically.
And it's like, how is that possible? Because right. He's in his head,
right?
He's in Dexter's head. He can't be like teaching him things.
I know. Well, keep in mind, by the way, that this is the same series that, in book form, eventually revealed that Dexter was actually possessed by a real demon.
God.
So, I mean, they may not have the tightest grasp on their own internal logistics. There may not be a Bible. There may be no canon present at Showtime for this program. So the dad is just basically, I mean, I just kept expecting them to do each other's hair or something. It was ridiculous.
Maybe because Michael C. Hall had cancer, maybe they thought he was going to die, so they didn't bother to actually write this season until the last minute.
Well, you know, like, that is it's funny you say that, because I actually started thinking, like, did they just have to cobble this together out of bits and pieces, which... As relentless and as merciless as I have been in my criticism of the third season of Californication, which sucked, which was one of the worst things. One of the worst. It was just a waste of talent, a waste of David Duchovny, a waste of everybody. At the bare minimum, at the very least, I can cut the third season of Californication some slack, because they had to basically write it all like minutes ahead of time, because Natasha McElhenney's husband died. Like, she's pregnant, she went home, and he was just dead in the doorway of their home, like, at age 41 or something. Like, out of the blue, and she couldn't be there for the series. And they had to basically, like, scrap all the stuff they had and write from scratch. Now, it was still terrible, and you would figure, like, professional, what are they called? Writers could do something better. But at least they had, like, an actual, you know, but from what I've heard, that wasn't the case with Dexter this year. That they actually had they're coming, we have a whole 5-season arc planned out. Which means that they were already, like, what we'll do is we'll make him a colossal pussy who is unlikable, and then we'll emasculate his father, and then also make him Merlin so he can see the future.
This could be, like, a 5-season arc, though, in the same way that, George Lucas always intended the prequels, and like, you know, Chris Carter knew where the X-Files was going.
Yeah.
In other words, a lie.
The numbers on Lost mean something, really. We'll explain it all. So, you know, anyway. But the one thing is unchanged. You know, my favorite character is not Quinn. My favorite character is Deb. But I'm full on rooting for Quinn just to catch it, because Quinn has become a really likable guy.
Really?
And plus, well, here's the other thing, is that like in the past you get like Doakes, who was pursuing Dexter, who he seemed unhinged. Like Doakes just seemed flat out crazy. So you could get the whole like, all right, well, I guess we'll blow up the cop who's just doing a job because he's a crazy guy. But Quinn. I think the most they ever said about that guy is that, like, maybe he took some money from a crime scene once that was, like, a drug dealer's. Like, maybe once, like, there was a coke dealer and he put some bills in his pocket. Like, who cares?
Are they still exploring the relationship between
Between Deb and Quinn?
No, who's it and what's her name? Their boss and the other
detective.
Oh,
yeah, and I way long past the point of caring.
Yeah.
Way beyond the point of me. I could give a rip.
I didn't care as soon as that started.
Yeah.
And then they just kept exploring. I kept waiting
and
for
the thing
it
is,
to tie back in somehow, and it doesn't.
And I love that Angel Batista guy. He's great. I love the actor. I even love the character. But that, like, Guerta is just, she's just such a one-dimensional shrew of a character. She's just written as such a ball cutter that it's like there's just no, and it's not like she, every female character has to be sympathetic, but they have to be like, you know, fleshed out and believable, and she's just not. She's just a harridan. And, you know, they kill her in the first book. Sorry, spoiler. In the first book, she gets killed. So they obviously had nothing on which to go. They're like, I don't know, let's just chew our cud some more for like four seasons. So that's what they're doing. But Quinn and Deb are together. And Quinn, God damn, what a ballless show this has become. Quinn actually yesterday goes, but Deb, I love you. And I was just watching it going like, what is this? What, we're going to synchronize our periods? What the F am I watching?
Fox, I'm sorry, Quinn loves her?
Quinn just said, Deb, I love you. And I was just, you know, and then she says, I swear to Christ, she then says something like, I feel the same way, and that's the problem. And I was just looking at my shoes, just going like, why am I here? What am I doing? I am wasting my life watching this show.
Aww.
Yeah, the funny thing is, just as with our top fives, we found out that we can get way more out of bad music than good. Yeah. I get way more that's why the other reason I've kept watching, I think, is subconsciously, we get way more conversation out of Dexter than we do out of, like, you know, Walking Dead or somewhere where we go like, it's awesome! You know, or whatever, like when we're watching, we were watching a Mad Men and going like, it's flawless. And, you know, where it's like this, I can just go on and on about the various ways in which Dexter is sucking.
I started to actually watch it last night. I was like looking
Dexter?
At things and I could watch Dexter and then I could talk to Rick about it and then I just went,
there was this great meta moment.
I don't want to.
I think there was a moment of self-reference, at which I love if they're done correctly. Like, there was that episode of Angel, I forget what it was. It was some episode of Angel where Angel had to pretend to be somebody else for the course of the episode, to pull off some scheme or whatever. And one of the characters at the end said, well, that guy can really act. Who knew? You know? Which I always figured was like a reference to the fact that Boreanaz got so much crap for being a wooden actor.
Or like the episode where Boreanaz can actually see his reflection. Angel can see his reflection in a mirror for the first time. He goes, has my hair always done this?
That's funny. That's hilarious. I don't think I ever saw that. Angel, I never finished that series. I pulled the ripcord at some point, and apparently it got good at the end.
It really did.
I should watch it.
Once she got past the whole teenage angst episodes.
There was this moment last night in Dexter, though, I will say this, where he's trying to, there's like this Tony Robbins guy, and Dexter thinks that he's this motivational speaker, the killer, whatever. And the guy, I swear to God, conveniently carries a vial of blood around his neck on like a chain and makes no secret of it.
Hmm.
Like they're at the gym. What's this? Vial of blood? And just carries it on a chain around his neck like it was like a birthstone.
Huh. And he's Billy Bob Thornton.
But it's one of those, and he never tries to hide it or anything. And by the way, he's obviously guilty of something, but he just lets Dexter see like, hey, and by the way, I carry some blood around my neck. It's not spooky. Hey, I'm going to take it off. I'm going to hang it in my locker while I shower after my workout, Dexter, just so you know where it is. And then he leaves. And so Dexter has a syringe and he like withdraws blood from the vial because he's going to test it and find out whose blood it is so he can prove, because he's got to follow the code.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Right.
I guess because dad will take a break from making cookies or something or whatever he does, wearing an apron.
When he's not beating guys to death with his fists in the gas station bathrooms.
It just sounds like I shouldn't even be watching the show, and yet I am. But Julia Stiles is all like. And her name is Lumen, which I think is like, isn't that like Latin or something for like light or blood or something or heavy-handed symbolism? Mm-hmm. So she's like, what are you going to do? And he's like, I'm going to go to the lab and test this for DNA and find out who it belongs to. Which is one of those things where he gets the police work done in like 7 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, where it takes like years to figure out. Like, I call up, like, you tried to find out who towed your car, and it took him all day. The license numbers are like, oh, all right, we'll call back in an hour. He's got...
You know, it's TV police work. Like when they get a partial thumbprint, and then, we'll run it through the database. Well, there's a match.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, it's
really?
This guy, you know? And it's like, and we've got a camera in his house. So it's like, he's got this, like, DNA that's, like, old and crusty from a vial a guy's been running around his neck for, like, a decade. And he goes, I get this DNA, I'm gonna go to the lab and figure out who it is. And Julia Stiles says, she goes, I love that you can do that. And then they just ended the scene. And I was like, not even there. They're not even hiding it anymore. They have contempt for their own tropes at this point. Christ. All right, let's do the taser watch, and then we will. I don't want to do it right out of a blood thing.
Oh, okay.
So we're gonna do a taser watch because that's better in a relative sense.
Yeah, that's better.
Then we'll share a special holiday message with you, and I don't know, and then we'll all dance. Don Taylor. Is this the taser watch?
It is.
Here's your taser watch for Tuesday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
You got me
Rick Emerson Radio Program. Now we enter the Taser Watch, a section of the program in which there will be no mention of penises or nudity at all, in which at no point will anybody be uncovered, and there will be no off-putting sexual content. Don Taylor?
Tampa police had to deploy a taser twice on a suspect who fought them after they say he vulgarly exposed himself to a woman.
Oh, sorry.
Police say John Lee Williams exposed his penis to an adult female victim Monday morning in an indecent manner.
As opposed to a decent manner. Yeah. That's a decent penis you got there, Ted.
A tasteful exposing of his penis. Right. The suspect ran when police found him, and they gave chase, deploying a taser. Williams ripped off the taser prongs and continued to flee. Police attempted to tase him again, but one of the prongs failed to strike.
Are these just Fisher-Price tasers they're using or something, or like a baby's first stun gun or something? Is it like a – are they not – is this like a is this like when you buy a toaster and sometimes there's a little spongy styrofoam thing over the plug and you have to take it off for it to go into the wall?
Yes.
Are there safeties on this that they're just not removing?
That could be it.
All right.
After running away once again, Officer Edwin Perez tackled the suspect who continued to fight back. A third officer responded, and they were finally able to apprehend Williams. Two of the three police officers suffered minor injuries and were treated and returned to full duty. Williams was charged with exposure of sexual organs and resisting arrest with violence.
Is there any? Are there any other descriptions of these sort of like the nature of the tasing? Was there some sort of a? Does it say if he was tased like in the business?
No, it's just more of a. He was running and they tased him, but he pulled the progs out. Then they tased him, but it bounced off of him or something because he's made of Teflon or.
These stories make no sense at all.
Seems to be some problems with this whole tasering thing.
It seems like it's a technology. Here's the thing I don't get about this, is. Leaving aside the fact that I don't grasp science all that well sometimes, it seems like just even the anecdotal evidence is it happens enough. It's substantial enough to indicate that there's a problem. You would figure the cops themselves would be saying something by now, like, "Hey, these don't work."
Well, in some cases, there seem to be two stories that we keep seeing in the news over and over again. One is the people that are their families are suing. Because someone was tased and it killed them. And then there's the other stories where police use tasers and the guys just rip them back off or they bounce off and they don't do anything.
There's really no middle ground.
We need to find that middle ground where the taser actually does what it's supposed to do without killing the guy.
The happy medium is what we need. The equitable split between the two. All right, there you go. There's your taser watch for Tuesday on the News Radio Program. Rick Emerson regrets the error. Excellent. There you go. That is your taser watch for Tuesday. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Tomorrow we'll be joined by Mr. Aaron Mesh, by the way, from Willamette Week. So you want to be listening for that. That's what you want to be doing. Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. All right. Here at the Rick Emerson Program, you're nuts for Christmas, aren't you?
I am crazy for Christmas.
See, that's the thing.
I love Christmas.
See, I'm glad. And I'm not saying that people lie about this or whatever, but, you know, there's people who are just all anti-Christmas or whatever. And I'm not saying this is always the case. Many times, though, I think that people just do that. I think it's sometimes that we are supposed to be, like impressed at how deep they are. That, like, they're not going to be taken in by the shallow materialism of, you know, blah, 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 whatever. As they're, like, drinking a $9 coffee or something.
Yeah, you and I are, in many ways, cynical bastards. We really are. But honestly, I mean, what is to be gained by, like, dissing Christmas?
No
thing is, it's not even, it's because I still loathe shopping as a whole. You know, and I don't. I think that it's ridiculous that people are spending a huge amount of money on Christmas. But the trappings of Christmas, the music, I love the way the city looks with all the lights. I love it when people decorate their houses. I love Christmas trees and the smell of the Christmas trees and in my house and all that stuff.
It's a thing where almost all of the component parts of Christmas should add up to something that we don't like. You know, and yet we do, in spite of many of the things. But you're right, and it's also like the aesthetic of Christmas. There's just no, so can I just tell you this? No, this is a true story. So last night, we haven't decorated the house fully yet. It's probably going to happen this weekend. We waited longer than we sometimes do because Laura, I just want to do it like November 1st, and she sort of like pushed me to kind of wait. But last night, she brought out from the basement, wrapped, and then it's like the thing of where you remember putting them away last year, that it's all, it's all great. She remember remember how great these decorations look? And here they are again. And plus, do you do this where you have like so many Christmas decorations or just things you put around the house, whatever, that you actually, like every year, you just sort of are surprised all over again that you own that. You're like, oh, we own that. Oh, that's awesome. Look at this cool thing we own. It's great. You know what I'm nuts for is holiday mugs, themed coffee mugs for whatever. Even though I don't drink as much coffee as I used to, I got for Halloween, I have these Halloween mugs, and they're huge. They're like giant, like Lorelei Gilmore-sized mugs, and they've got bats and ghosts on them. They're either black with white or they're white with black, and they're awesome. And I augmented them this year with ones that look like huge pumpkins. So, but I put those away, and then I got the holiday mugs. And so the holiday mugs are fantastic. I have this whole series of snowman mugs, and then just last year, and I got these, by the way, at Target, and they're awesome. Target, I'm telling you right now, that place, people compare that to Walmart, and it's a bad rap they get. There's some great things at Target. They have these mugs, these big, white, thick porcelain mugs, then with silver snowflakes sort of embossed onto the side. Not microwave safe. They will spark if you put them in, which I found out the hard way, but they're fantastic. So, but I forgot that I owned them. We had them all last year, and then just like I forgot until Lara brought them out last night in a box. She's like, look, baby, holiday mugs. And it was like she knows exactly what to do to lift my mood. So it was great. So we are completely, we're just fools for Christmas here. So if you are listening to this program and if you are the same, or if you got, if you got kids, you got, or maybe you got like a whole, there's that thing like my friend Todd, the corpse, he does this whole thing where it's like the holiday responsibilities rotate. Because he's got some big Dutch family. Apparently Danes are just nuts for having babies. I mean, I guess the Danes, they just, in Denmark, they just, he's not from Denmark, but whatever, they're Dutch, and I guess they spray babies out constantly. Not a spraying as such, as you know what I mean, but they have big families. And, but so they rotate where it's like this year, like your family has to plan all the Christmas stuff, and we all go to like a place of your choosing and do your stuff for Christmas. Next year, Bob will choose all of the Christmas things. So it's like about every 6 years, it's on him to plan Christmas for like 70 people or something. But if you're going to be planning Christmas for your family, or again, if you've got kids, because I mean, here's the thing. As much as I don't have kids, and as much as I'm not like a guy who's going to have kids, kids are just, they are just ecstatic about Christmas. And, and it's like even the hardest of hearts, what are you going to do? You're not going to give your kids like a cool Christmas experience? I mean, you just can't not do that. It's a thing that that we all know is, it's part of the childhood imperative, is to have a glorious Christmas whenever possible. So that is all leading up to talking about Christmas Mountain Trees, where one of our new business partners. And by the way, I can reveal this. I don't know the actual date, but Dawn Taylor, yes, you and I will be taking a wagon ride through the many, many thickets of trees.
Christmas Mountain Trees. That's a kind of creepy euphemism, is it?
Maybe. We'll be taking a wagon. Yes, we will both be going into the forest, Dawn, and one of us will be coming out in a stained clown suit. ChristmasMountainTrees.com. It is an entire, it's not just the tree, it really is an experience. And when you understand experience, I mean, everything's an experience. I guess getting audited by the IRS is an experience. This is a fantastic experience. So it's a bit of a drive, but when you get out there, I mean, it's amazing. You can see three of the Cascades. You can see Rainier. You can see Adams. You can see Mount St. Helens from up there. And it's just, it's 60 acres of trees. Now, you're not to pick over all 60 acres. I mean, I guess you could. I suppose if you took lunch and or just a tastier member of your family to go along with you, but it's 60 acres of trees. I mean, it's 85,000 trees, and this is what they do. It's a family-owned business. It's a family farm. They function year-round, and they grow these trees. And of course, the trees have been there for 6, 8, 10, 12 years. And because it's a farm, you don't have to feel like, well, I'm taking a tree from Mother Nature. Mother Nature wants you to have these trees. That's why they're so glorious and beautiful to begin with. So every year they get the crop of trees that are ready, and they put you, you know, you it's like a wagon with a there's a sort of a tractor that takes you along. And as you bundle up, they give you the hot cider. You got your hot chocolate. There's warming stations. There's actually a whole place where you can gather with your family in front of a huge roaring fire, either before you pick out the tree or once you find the tree. They'll let you cut it down yourself if you really want to be all Balboa about it. Or you could just say, that's our tree right there. Everybody signs off in the tree. You go back to the warming place. You sit in front of the fire. You drink your cider. The guy shows up. He's like, here's your tree. And they've already wrapped it. They've got it. They put it on. They can fasten it to your car for you. Take it home. Bam, you're good to go. So you get the you get the view. You get the snow-covered hills. You get the huge like forest of trees you can look at. I mean, you get your cider. Your kids are happy. You look like the best parent ever. It really. And plus, if you go on a day to be determined in the future, we'll announce this. You get to see Don and I on a wagon ride, which is a thing you never in your wildest imaginings thought would be happening. And nobody out there ever really thought that they would hear the phrase, and you can see Rick Emerson and Don Taylor in a wagon ride. I mean, that's just not, it's not a thing you anticipate happening in your life, but it will, all because of ChristmasMountainTrees.com. So before I wrap this up, I really want to give this website, you should go there, write it down, it's just like it sounds, all one word, Christmas Mountain Trees. And it just sounds like a place you want to go, come on. Christmas Mountain just sounds like a place you want to spend your time at. So Troy and Jennifer, they are the latest of the family to run this. It's been in the family since 1940, this business. ChristmasMountainTrees.com. That is ChristmasMountainTrees.com. They help make the Rick Emerson Show possible. ChristmasMountainTrees.com.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
I would like to mention this last year we moved into this new apartment and we did not decorate for Christmas at all. And I didn't have a tree or anything. And it just everything just felt wrong. It just I was already just really grumpy and in a bad mood. And then we never got a tree or anything. And so it's like this year I was just like, oh, we are having a tree.
Yeah.
And we are bringing out the decorations. And we are going to make this place Christmassy.
And the thing is, and I, you know, like I said, I grew up with the artificial tree. But now that we're doing the, it's like the real tree. And it's like now I resist getting rid of it. Now I have it until like, I think last year, I think the tree was in our house until February something. It's like February 12th. And I was like, and then, but then it's like, you know, then you're that family that has the tree to February 12th, and it's like, when am I going to get rid of this? And it's like, there's no cover of darkness that can hide the fact that you're taking your Christmas tree out of your house in February.
And also, there's that whole, if you are a Christmas person, there's that whole Christmas decoration thing, the tree decoration thing.
Yeah.
Because, like, I've got the big box, I've got the ornaments, and I've got ornaments from when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And then I have ornaments that Patrick and I bought together, you know, each year that, you know, we've been together 11 years now. And the first few years when we were still all like, we're in a relationship, every year we would, like, go and be buying.
Get our picture taken in the mall and put it in an ornament.
Well, we never did that. But we did get, we did this thing, like, every single year that they had the superhero ornaments at Hallmark, we would get the superhero ornaments. So every year we get the tree, and then it's like, we figure out the perfect place to put, like, Spider-Man. Because Spider-Man is the most awesome, because the Spider-Man ornament actually looks like he's swinging from branch to branch on his web.
That is awesome.
Web.
That is fantastic.
And then Batman looks like he's actually dangling from a thing using his batarang.
Like a grappling, batarang thing.
So they're just awesome. We always have to find just the perfect place for those.
Excellent. So, Laura and I, our equivalent of that is that the first year we were together, or the first year we decorated a tree together anyway, because I think we moved it when we first met and we weren't able to do it. But she bought this... like a retro, it's like a robot. And it's the old square, you know, robot from the 50s. And so, you know, it's like a bunch of boxes. So it's sort of it kind of looks a little bit like Marvin from the Hitchhikers TV series. But she bought this sort of square 1950s robot ornament, which is great. And he's got like a little bit of glitter on him. And so the next year she bought a pink flamingo ornament. And I decided that the robot and the flamingo fight crime together, that they're a crime fighting team. But now every year she buys another ornament. The team expands every year. So now it's robot, flamingo, and skunk. So she bought this great wooden skunk ornament that's like this the kind of cute, cartoony sort of wooden skunk that's been hand carved or whatever. And every year I have to make up like a little theme song, like, you know, robot and flamingo, they're fighting crime, they're doing stuff. And then last year I was doing the whole like, you know, it's Butters thing where it's like, it's robot and flamingo and skunk. You know, it's, you know. So now God only knows what she's going to buy this year, and I'll have to work it into the crime-fighting jingle. I'm a retard. Let's end this show now. All right. The Rick Emerson Radio Program comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon, where the sun is shining, by the way, where it looks relatively nice outside. It's all weird.
Oh, it's a lie.
Freaking, it's like a bait and switch. Freaking me out. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kenneco, with the Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from you, as well as our fine business partners. It is Tuesday, November 23rd, 2010, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, coming up next, an encore of Legion of News, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. It all follows a brief musical interlude. Thank you for listening. That is The Frequency. Kenneth, see you tomorrow. Be safe. Bye now.